Ladies and gentlemen, this is an unprecedented occurrence here. Josh Barnett was on his way, and not only did he run into ridiculous traffic, but Josh is so gangster, he drives a 1969 automobile around, and unfortunately got a flat tire. You drove that bitch all the way up. Is it working?
Yeah.
You drove that bitch all the way up from Orange County? You do that on a regular basis?
Yeah, I bought the thing to be a daily driver, you know, and I got kind of tired of how... I mean, I don't drive anything passionless, but... I just want to drive an old car. I like the simplicity of it. I like the noise. I like the feel of it.
Yeah.
So, and plus, it's not anything super special. Like, it doesn't have a bunch of fancy modded out brakes and all that. No, it's just all pretty much old school technology. I know exactly what I'm dealing with, and stuff breaks. I can fix it. Not a problem.
You don't. It doesn't bother you that it takes a long time for those things to slow down when you're trying to hit the brakes.
You got to account for that. This is true. I don't know. I'm used to driving old cars all my life.
Yeah.
And I've driven a lot worse than this. And I have a rear disc conversion kit, so it'll be four-wheel disc brakes. It's still going to take way longer to stop than say my Challenger, but
right.
I'm okay with that.
Yeah, once you drive a modern version of a muscle car, you're like, oh, why can't you just do this with a better interior? Why can't you do this with like an old school interior? Like, to make it like that. It's just, I like a car that can start. Like, when you want to start it,
it starts.
For sure.
My Cutlass turns right over.
Really?
Every single time. Just, I mean, even if it goes da-da-da-da-da-da, boom, just goes. Just super, super clean.
So it
runs great.
It's 100% reliable.
It is 100% reliable, and I'm putting a overdrive tranny in it. I'm doing things here, things there, and it'll be... I just want basically a high 14-second quarter-mile car that you can drive everywhere and never... Yeah, see, I can't leave enough alone. It's got a peg leg in it right now, so I got to put a posi unit in it. That just has to happen.
You're like the quintessential boy-turned-man. Metal music, yeah. Cage fighting, muscle cars. I mean, it's like, it's all of the quintessential manly-type shit.
If somebody ever asked me, like, so what are you really good at? Doing manly shit and making manly faces while I do manly shit. Like, I can scowl, I can look inquisitive, and I can stare off in the distance, and I can hold a cigar in my mouth, and I can put grease in the right places.
You got
coveralls.
A whole manly repertoire.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Which is good, because it offsets, you know, all the times that I'm wearing panties.
It offsets the society, too.
Yeah,
society
it does.
Society has a distinct lack of manliness going on.
It does. The boobs are not just on the women anymore.
Yeah, it's not. And, you know, there's a lot of that. There's a lot of, you know, men are giving in to what women like. Because if you don't, you get labeled, mm-hmm. you know. If you like all the shit that you like, you get labeled. You're like, you're a chauvinist, you're a pig,
sure. There's
something wrong with you, you're a meathead, you're a metalhead. You know, whatever, you get labeled as being someone, you know, undesirable or slightly immature.
You know, I love the fact that, so I blame skinny jeans for all that. But,
yeah,
and,
what
and
the fuck
and male
is
Spanx.
That? Skinny jeans are ridiculous. If you can't sprawl in your pants... then you shouldn't be wearing them. If you couldn't throw at least a body kick in your pants, you shouldn't be wearing them. You shouldn't be wearing something that you have to struggle to get out of or in. That shit's ridiculous.
See, maybe those Chuck Norris karate pants, the karate denims with the gusset crotch will come back in.
Dude, they should.
Yeah, totally. You can roundhouse anybody in the face, no problem.
We need to get like a True Religion version of the Chuck Norris jeans. Like, they need to combine forces. The ultimate club pants.
Oh,
you can throw high kicks with.
Oh, the ultimate ninja douchebagger.
Oh, could you imagine just the commercials would be guys throwing roundhouse kicks
with their pointy fucking slip-on shoes and their fucking heavily monogrammed glittery shirts.
Bro, throwing karate roundhouse kicks.
Yeah, but as far as like labels, like I've been labeled all my life. I was a nerd and a dork, and I was an outcast kid, you know, and I liked weird shit, like foreign films and gore movies and anime and comic books, and would go to the racetrack with my family and classic cars and just all kinds of weird, just fucked up shit where, you know, I'm captain of the football team, but nobody else knows what tip I'm on. They're just going, dude, you're a weirdo. All right.
But were you always attracted to being into shit that was like away from the crowd, or is that just the stuff that you liked?
Both.
Both.
I mean, I grew up in that weird era where cable came about, and so they would fill the airways full of whatever cheap shit they could get, and that ended up being a lot of weird shit. a lot of weird shit from, you know, from Japan, from everywhere. And then I had a fixation with horror movies as a kid, and that
went
other places, you know. Like, all of a sudden it's like, well, Friday the 13th is cool, but I didn't really get to see that head get crushed. So where can I pick that up at? You know, what movie's got that in it?
So you got Faces of Death. Did you get into all that?
Actually, I was more into like the Italian, like Fulci zombie movies and stuff, where they're horrible and the dubbing is the worst ever. But, you know, people are like vomiting out their insides. Just... you know, vaginas start talking and eating things, and whatever. If that's a movie, you should probably see it.
Wasn't there, there was a whole series in, like, I guess it was like the 60s and the 70s, of just what they would call gore movies, where movies were unbelievably gory. Like, I remember I picked up a magazine about it once. It just, you know, it was one of those, just looking through random magazines, mm-hmm. like, what the fuck is this? Like, Fangoria, and it was all about mm-hmm. one different type of gore film that this one dude used to make.
Oh, the Herschel Gordon Lewis stuff, like the 10,000 Maniacs. And
yeah, I think that's it.
And The Wizard of Gore.
Yeah.
And, yeah. And so he came out, they were making, like, these, I think they were X-rated at the time, but they weren't hardcore, but, like, these exploitation films at one point. And then it was, like, that wasn't enough, so they created this movie. They showed, you know, people getting their tongues cut off. And, I mean, they're really cheesy.
Yeah.
Like, so bad. But
still disturbing.
But back then, it really fucked people's minds up.
Yeah.
And that was, you know, that was just, it just, that was their new thing. All of a sudden, the audience was just flipped out about it, and they had to get more of it.
Yeah, I remember seeing that as a little kid going, who the fuck wants to watch this? Like, this is just disturbing. Like, I understand a good zombie movie, a good vampire movie, you know, something fun. But who the fuck wants to watch people just get chopped up like this?
Apparently, a lot of people.
A lot of people.
You know, with the with you've got the whole what was that Eli Roth thing, the torture film that they had.
Oh yeah.
Which I can't remember. But they've done two of them, I think, where the travelers end up in like Romania, and then they get lured into some place by hot bitches.
Hostel. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I only saw the first one of those. I mean, they got me once.
Right, and then of course, then the rich people paid and tortured. But honestly, really, it's all the women's fault.
The chicks lured them in, those of evil course. Bitches.
Vagina God ruins lives.
It ruins lives. It certainly can.
Yeah, you know what? You go after a piece of strange, and you get a fucking, you know, splinter shoved into your eye. That's what happens.
It can happen.
Yeah, and there's no protection for that. Like, they don't make a condom for that one.
Now, you fought all over the world, right? I mean, have you ever fought in Russia?
I have never fought in Russia.
You ever hear Heath Herring's description of going to the hospital in Russia?
He said it looked like Dawn of the Dead.
Yeah, he said there was like bodies laying out there and they're just stitching people up in front of you and you're like, what the fuck is going on, man? Bodies like laying on
like vodka probably for an antiseptic.
Ugh. Yeah. And that was during the Dark Age when the Soviet Union collapsed. So I think times were really fucking hard there for a long time.
I'm sure there's still some of that to be found over in Russia because it's such a difference in class at this point.
Yeah.
There's like the uber rich, and then there's like not really a middle class to my understanding.
Well, that's why a movie like Hostel works because, you know, you look at like these pretty girls and you're like, if they were really cold-hearted killers from Russia, they could sneak you in.
Pull your butt cheeks apart until you died.
I wonder if there really are that... people that are willing to pay people to go.
Well, think of it this way. I mean, think about all the perverted shit that we think about, right? And that we go, and then we go look up and watch on the internet while we're masturbating. So
not me.
Oh,
speak for yourself.
All right. Well, yeah. Some of us are easily amused. But the thing being is that you can think of all kinds of fucked up weird fetish,
right?
And there is at least a handful of people out there that are going to do it.
Yeah.
Anything you can imagine, someone's doing.
I just couldn't imagine someone being able to organize a place where you could actually go to torture people. I feel like somebody is going to tell this is going to fall apart.
I don't put anything past humanity to do. Is the most fucked up thing and the most beautiful thing as easily as one or the other.
Have you ever seen the Bohemian Grove footage? Do you know anything about Bohemian Grove?
No, it's not. Is that a bunch of hippies?
No, just the opposite. A bunch of like banker type dudes and dignitaries from foreign countries and like skull and bones type dudes.
Mm-hmm.
They get together and who knows what the fuck is really going on, but they have this giant Moloch, the owl god, and they all dress up in robes. It's ridiculous. I mean, it's been proven that there's like secret societies.
It sounds like LARPing.
LARPing? What's LARPing?
Live action role playing.
Oh, it is like that.
We're all running around. Woo!
Like when these guys that are in like Skull and Bones and like a lot of, like there's a lot of weird, silly, ritualistic shit that they're doing. And apparently there literally are people to this day. I don't know. I mean, Alex Jones broke into it and like it was over a decade ago and filmed it. These fucking people, they're burning an effigy. They have like sticks wrapped up and they're burning it for the sacrifice of the owl god. I mean, these are like millionaires. And it's
owl
ridiculous.
God, huh? Yeah, they couldn't have chose something better than that?
Moloch's a bad motherfucker, dude.
Is he?
Apparently. I don't know.
I've never been fucked up by an owl. I know that.
Owls are bad.
I mean, they are tough. They have big talons and everything, but... Why not a grizzly bear?
That would definitely be scary.
That would totally be scary. For it makes it even a gnarlier noise. Owls don't sound scary.
Right. And it'd take a long time for an owl to kill you, and you probably would win.
Yeah.
If you had to go toe-to-toe with an owl...
I put my money on myself.
Fuck yeah. All you need to do is grab a hold of his neck.
What kind of
defense does an owl have?
Not even... Like it could pull flesh out, whatever. We're talking about life and death.
I'm
going
to kill that thing.
But even a small brown bear or black bear...
Oh, fuck you up, man. And black bears are scared of you, so you don't have to worry about them as much. But, you know, if you wanted to. A fucking cat, man. A 30-pound cat is scary as shit.
I do have a desire. I don't think I'll ever make it happen. To have, like, a cougar-sized cat is, like, my pet. And I don't mean, like, pet. Like, I want to walk it around on a leash. No, I just want someone to break into my house while I'm gone. So, you know, the variation being... Oh, you got your dogs there. The robber breaks in or whatever. And the dog's like, and they run away. Well, the cat, the robber breaks in. Just keeps stealing shit, right? And he's like unhooking your TV and all of this. And all of a sudden just, wow. And he hears that roar from a puma. And it's on his neck just murdering him. So you come home and you're like, oh, I see you had someone to play with while I was gone.
They say that if you see a mountain lion first, that it's very likely that he's not going to attack you if you see him first.
I can believe that.
But if he sees you first, he might not be able to resist it. You know, if he knows that you don't know what the fuck has happened. That rush of just creeping up on you and just jacking you.
Bushwhacking you.
Oh, it must be so fun. I mean, that's what they love.
So what they should do is they should get mountain lions to be the ones to spread the gospel of Jesus around, because then nobody would know that they were around. They could sneak up on you and like, hey, you have a minute to talk about our Lord and Savior? You're like, fuck, where'd you come from?
They would do it a little differently, though. They would introduce you to him immediately. At least if you get killed by a cat, though, they kill you. You know, bears just start eating. They just hold you down and start eating you. That's a lot more of a pain in the ass. You hear about that guy in Africa, student?
He got eaten by a bear?
Fucked up by chimpanzees.
Oh.
They dragged him a mile. Dragged him a mile. Beat the fucking shit out of him. Dragged him under a fence. And then dragged him like a
Can
mile.
Can we blame Kubrick for that?
Well, these chimps were all problem chimps. They were all chimps that had been in zoos and in captivity. They were trying to reintroduce them.
I love that song by AC/DC.
Problem chimps?
Yeah.
Is that a song? It should be. Somebody should have a problem chimp song. But they're not just, they're not even wild chimps. These are chimps that they're trying to reintroduce the wild, I'm pretty sure. It's like zoo chimps, circus chimps.
So they're like chimps that have needed therapy, and then these chimps.
Sure. They found a guy that beat the fuck out of them. Well, a lot of those chimps, first of all, I think they get mental illness. If you're naturally supposed to be in a wild situation where all your instincts are tuned into protecting yourself, looking around, making sure that nothing's sneaking up on you, and yet you live in front of a giant glass wall where every day these weird pink monkeys are staring at you, and your senses are going off, and you don't know what the fuck to do. It just becomes normal, and you get used to it, but every day you probably go crazy. They're probably crazy. It's a completely unnatural environment.
Because they don't have the higher brain capacity to logically work out what's going on, where they're at, how this whole deal works.
And how many of them are abused? I think a lot. I think a lot of them get abused. You know, that's the scenario that took place in that Planet of the Apes movie, the most recent one, where one guy was an asshole spraying the chimps with a hose. I'm sure that happens. I'm sure they get abused. And I'm sure they're assholes, too. I'm sure they do cunty things, and you want to fucking spray the chimp with a hose.
I wouldn't doubt that for a second. Have you seen them raping frogs?
Woo! Yeah, it's hilarious. But fuck a frog.
But who puts a... Well, they do, technically. but who throws the frog in there at some point, like, watch this monkey rape this frog.
I wonder if it was just a natural occurrence. The frog just fucked up and wound up there. But a lot of them, don't they have, like, a thing where you can't climb out?
Yeah, so I think there's, you know, some, like, 19-year-old zookeeper dipshit. He's like,
people and animals. What a strange combination. It's going to be real weird if we find out there's something much smarter than us. Because we're going to have to figure out how to convince it to not put us in a zoo. You think about the way we treat all the shit that's just barely a little less smart than us.
I don't think that they would have to be convinced. I think we'd do it to ourselves anyways.
Probably.
Reality television.
I mean, yeah.
We're you know, the idea of sticking us behind a cage and letting us act like the biggest assholes we could possibly think of, generally in New Jersey, then there you go. It's a ratings wonder.
Yeah, Housewives. But that show is like a human zoo in a lot of ways. That's part of the appeal, is that you don't know anybody like that. You're not hanging out. You're not introducing anybody like those idiots into your life. Mm-mm. But yet you can watch them, you know, like the men posturing with each other. I'm going to call him Josephine. He's a fucking girl, that one. You're like, whoa, do you hear yourself? This is an actual, you're a grown man.
Josephine, that's a pretty complex word for an idiot.
Well, really common, actually. Common in Jersey. It's my grandmother's name.
Josephine?
Yeah. All right. Yeah, it's an Italian woman's name. It's very common. But the guy was Joe, so he's calling him Josephine. I mean, he's going to fuck him. He's a little girl. I'm calling him a girl's name. And you're like, what kind of asshole would you, I mean, would you ever let that guy in your house? Would you ever hang out with him? If anybody like that was talking in your house, you would immediately start mocking them. And you would go, you gotta get the fuck out of here.
I'd probably marry him.
That's your type?
Oh, I love it. Oh, oiled up, spiky hair, and lots of big earrings.
Steroids.
Oh, totally.
Juiced up. The big hoop earrings, those are very important. Mm. There's something about the daring dual hoop.
DJ on the side.
How did the stretch thing start happening? There's two things I don't understand.
I don't know.
Culture.
I don't know when the plug thing started happening. I know, like, there were the piercing kids were into that, and you know, it was like a certain kind of scene wanted to do that.
Right.
And then, like, hipsters started doing it, like indie kids
and
little art kids. And then it started to grow, and then, well, and, you know, at some point, okay, let's say you don't want a fucking earring anymore. You don't have to wear an earring. But if you just fucking mangled your ear into some weird grown-out disc, like, once you get over
that,
I don't know. I suppose they like, loop it over the rest of their ear.
Do they cut it back? They cut it back and stitch it up?
I've heard someone say that they can do whatever. I'm like, well, who wants to go through all of that?
That's a pain in the ass. And then what if you get staph?
Yeah. Your ear.
Yeah. Stupid. Yeah, there's two things that always trouble me in our culture. Like, how did that get that far? Because I understand, you know, when other cultures have been doing things for thousands of years and the ties stick fucking rods through their face.
You're living in a jungle, and, I mean, you're not even trying to be about modernization.
Yeah.
You're just living your life.
But in this country, there's that, there's the ear thing, and then there's the fucking saggy pants thing.
The saggy pants thing kills me more than the ear thing.
The saggy pants thing is, I can't believe, if you came up to me in the 1980s and said, do you think saggy pants will still be around in 2012? I said, the fuck out of here. There's no way. It's so dumb. I can't believe it's here now. I'm like, trust me, it's not going to last. They don't even know what it's from. It's from prison. When the guys are in prison, they got no belts because they don't want to commit suicide. So everyone's sagging their pants. So when they get out, they're used to doing that. It's like an ex-con thing. There's nothing cool about it. Well, somehow or another, it became a rock star thing. And, like, you meet, like, guys that are, like, in bands, and they're sagging their pants. They have their pants buckled up over their dick. I'm like, what the fuck are you doing? Are you a gangster? Are you
basketball shorts underneath the pants? And then,
what is that about? What is that? That is a weird look.
It's horrible. And then there's kids with the skinny jeans, the practical jeggings, and they're sagging.
Yeah.
Like, there's, like, a little space back there.
Weird urge to pants those guy and headbutt them. When you see a dude with the pants, like, really just below their dick, you're like, this is just, you're crazy. You're walking
them,
around.
Like, them start sprinting and watch them fall over themselves.
You're walking around amongst people, and you're basically, you look like
a slob.
Yeah. You're basically handcuffing yourself, and you're allowing people to close the handcuffs. Like, you got this little thing on. You can just, someone just pants you and push you over. Like, this is ridiculous. This is the dumbest thing you could be doing.
It's retarded.
What kind of a man? What does that say about our society? That people, for whatever reason, this is how they choose to leave the house. They want to buckle their pants above their cock and have their underwear hanging above it. What? No, that's what you do? Yeah, man, it's dope. I'm sagging. Like, that doesn't even... That's got to be some sort of it's an aberration, like some sort of a thing that...
You'd think so, but it just continues to exist and perpetrate and just still continue to be... I see people like that all the time. I see guys where they buy the jeans sag them so much that, and then wear the long shirt that it looks like your legs
are pockets
like
are where your knees are
2 feet long.
It doesn't make any sense.
And you know what? I'm not here to talk about fashion for the most part in terms of like. Well, I didn't mean that in general. Like, we want to talk about fashion. We can go all on.
He's not like a politician. I'm not here to talk about fashion.
I'm here to get down to brass tacks. My opponent wants to talk about fashion, how he wants to tax you for skinny jeans.
Yeah, tax you for being a douchebag. Is your belt buckle below your dick? You're a fucking idiot, okay? Is your dick above your belt buckle? You, sir, are an asshole. You need to pull your fucking pants up. You can't possibly be contributing to society.
How old does that make you feel to have that?
Very old.
That rant.
Not just old, but confused. Like, this is not... something has happened did not expect.
I think we've lived through eras and are familiar with evolutions of fashion as it is, and just we've seen
bell bottoms.
Yeah,
not nearly as preposterous.
No, they're not, and not nearly as offensive either.
No.
But so we started off. I'm from '77, so I remember when bell bottoms were still kind of hanging around. You know, in those fucking Mork and Mindy vests with like the multicolors on them and goofy shit, right? And the bowl haircuts. But then going into the '80s and the abstract hairs and the all the different, and there was like. All the androgynous shit, there was the super tight stuff, there was the really colorful stuff, there was like everything, the girls that looked like Nagel paintings. Okay, I've seen all that. And then you go to the 90s, and then it just got, okay, sagging pants and like weird, odd colors and shoulder pads and whatever. And then the 2000s, and then we start combining fashion stuff from classic eras. And I mean, all sorts of stuff is making all kinds of comebacks. So you're seeing looks from all over the place, everywhere, every day, even right now. That is the word, the sagging jeans. Just that is the, you're, I just can't get, I mean.
That's the bottom, that's the least understandable.
If you're a rock star on stage and you're sagging your jeans a little bit and you're looking like particularly, you're deliberately trying to look like you're a pile of shit, like some sort of.
Right.
Thrown together, just sloppy son of a bitch on purpose.
Right.
Yes. Got it. To a degree. But when you're just, when you're like a size 30 waist and you've got 40 jeans on and they're just piled around your ankles.
Yeah.
Just, what the fuck are you thinking?
What the fuck are you doing?
Buying like quadruple X shirts that hang down past your knees. You know who wears shirts that are so big that it covers their whole body? Women do when they sleep in them at night. And I'm not even talking about
pregnant.
Yeah, or when they're pregnant. They wear that, or girls wear that. When you're like 14.
Yeah.
Your nighty shirt.
Silly bitch. Someone's gonna pants you. Someone's gonna pants you and push you over.
And then pull your shirt over the fucking top of your face.
And then give you noogies.
Yeah, it's take a fucking piss on you.
It's a ridiculous look. And I can't believe it's still around. It doesn't make sense. And I think it has something to do with the fact that we're not fulfilling our hunter-gatherer genes. Our hunter-gatherer genes are being ignored.
Our hunter-gatherer genes are sagging right now.
Yeah, our warrior genes, they're not being fulfilled. So we have all these genetic impulses that are all suppressed. And so what do people do? It goes off in aberrations. And some aberrations are like sagging jeans. They do stupid shit because they know that they don't have to worry. If you were out in fucking Alaska and you were running away from bears all day, you would have your belt buckle cinched in, you'd have your fucking boots
tied,
and you would walk outside the door and you would be like, shh, 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 the fuck is that? You wouldn't be like, yeah, man, you know, I'm just taking cough syrup and my pants sagging. Dudes are medicating themselves on purpose, leaving their house dulled. Why? Because they're thumbing their finger, they're giving the finger to nature.
Right.
They're saying, it's so safe. I can go out with my fucking belt tied
I'm
over
so
my
bored.
Dick.
I have to think of new ways to be an asshole because I don't have anything to worry about
anymore.
Exactly.
Sedated, going outside, not worrying about anything.
Sip a scissor.
Sleeping on a park bench. You're not worried about animals coming up and eating you. There's no animals out here. The pigeons, that's it. You ain't gonna worry about shit.
No, they're not doing a damn thing.
God damn it, we've thumbed our nose in the face of evolution. And this is the rebound.
The easier things get, the weaker we become, the more we start looking for new and other ways to try and express that which is not being used at all. And not that I'm saying everybody needs to go out and start getting in fist fights and drinking whiskey and being fucking heavy metal badass like myself, but do something.
Do something difficult.
Do
so you
something.
Test your character.
Anything difficult.
Yes, anything.
Like just start by, let's say maybe, one, using definite words when you speak. Stop saying like, kind of, sort of. I sat there and listened to a cable guy connecting my stuff, saying, well, you kind of do this, and it's like that. And it's, what do you mean it's kind of in like? You fucking hit the enter button, and it absolutely, positively chooses said thing that you fucking put the cursor on. It's not kind of. It's not sort of. It's like
it's a filler. It's fucking. It's another way of
it
saying
it. But now it's like, commit. Commit. Right. Yeah. People don't want to commit to anything. Nobody wants to deliberately say, I'm going to be there at this time, and I'm going to fucking be there.
Right.
It's, I kind of maybe, you know, no one ever wants to also be deliberate in their speech, because what they say, someone goes, well, you know, I think that that black is the new gray. Someone goes, what? No. And they disagree because you made a definite statement. You took a stand. You made yourself be known, I think black is the new gray. Fuck you. If you think differently, fine, we're going to get into an argument about it. I might run you over with my fucking car or whatever, but this is how I feel about it. And so if you say, I kind of think black is the new, it gives you that wiggle room that you can fucking slink your way out. You can, you're greased up enough, right. You can slide under the door.
Right, kind of.
And I fall, it's such a common part of speech at this point that even I find myself saying like and kind of here and there. Right. But I can't stand it.
I hate when I catch myself saying like.
I'm not all about the like either. But, you know, kind of this and sort of that. And no, it isn't kind of or sort of anything. Lots of shit in this world is not kind of or sort of. It just is. So you can't get away from that. Just fucking deal with it. So, you know, that's just a huge pet peeve of mine, dealing with people on a regular basis. Like, it's so much easier for someone to think of things, always having the ability to excuse themselves from it, so that way they don't ever have to take the brunt of the responsibility either.
Well, I'm sure your reason for not liking that in other people is that you would hate to see that ever in yourself. It's a weakness.
We've all been there. Yeah. We've all done those things. Sure. We've all done bullshit stuff like that. I think the difference being is when you realize that was bullshit.
Yeah, you learned. Yeah, and some people aren't learning. Some people, and that's where they need to. Someone needs to kick them in the ass. Someone needs to say, "Listen, you got to catch the fuck up, all right? You learn from your mistakes and then improve and move on. It's not just a continual cycle of failing and trying to get back on the horse and failing. It's learn how to ride a fucking horse, okay? It's not how many times you fall off the horse. Don't fall off the fucking horse again, stupid. Okay? Train the horse right, ride the horse right, and don't fall off the fucking horse.
That's right. You could be Christopher Reeve. You keep falling off of horses,
especially if you want to get a horse to jump over some shit that it doesn't want to jump over.
Right.
I will never understand that.
You know? It's, you know what, it is a lot to say that you can master an animal like that.
That is,
but it is a massive fucking animal. And when it doesn't want to do what it wants to do, like how do you? I mean, I think it's great that we can use our intellect to control this thing. But when it came down to the physical aspects, like you can't make a fucking horse do what it doesn't want to.
Especially
if it really didn't want
jump
to.
Over shit. It's one thing if you're riding a trail horse. You want the horse to ride on a trail. A horse with a 200-pound man on its back, it's really not that big a deal for a horse, and they can safely walk. But you want a horse to jump over shit? You want it to fly through the air with a person on its back? Okay. You're fucking crazy. What? Have you ever tried? There's a lot of other shit. You know, go fucking take a martial arts class. Learn how to drive a race car. Race cars are great. They have brakes.
Race cars are great.
They're
fun. They are fantastic.
Yeah, you learn how to steer. They're very predictable. It's not a fucking animal. Some crazy
animal. That has a mind of its own.
That just wants to jump for whatever reason. Wants to buck you back. And it lands on you and crushes your skull on a rock. How about that? The rest of your life, you have a window the size of a quarter that you can see the world out of, and you're fucking shit in your pants.
And that's not anything that I'm interested to. This is why I shoot all horses on sight.
Have you ever had some of those Alistair Overeem horse steaks?
No. I haven't worked my way up. I'm more of a goat dick guy, you know, at least with the whole heavy metal attitude. They're a little spicier.
Horse meat's supposed to be really delicious, actually.
I have had horse meat in Japan at raw.
Did you like? Oh, really? Didn't do raw? It
for me. Yeah, it's like a horse sashimi is like a delicacy over there, especially in like Kyushu and the more southern prefectures. But I just, it doesn't, I didn't dig it. It was all right. And then Brian Johnston.
Is it kind of gamey?
It's. I couldn't really. I'd be like
venison, like sort of a taste, maybe
closer to that. But I like venison.
Love venison.
It's a little.
I'm amazed how hard it is to get venison. You would think like
really
like yeah. You think like these are fucking pretty prevalent animals. Why isn't someone breeding them like around here? You know, I mean, venison.
Like
is
somewhere
delicious.
On like the valley or something.
Yeah,
they had
a big fucking field.
Oh, because here's the thing. Well, you know, there's worth a shitload. It's hard enough to get assholes in Hollywood to eat meat as it is.
Like, really?
Oh. And then you go ahead and you want to deliver something like, okay, they're going to eat cow, they'll eat chicken, they'll definitely eat fish.
Right.
I was just making fun of somebody the other day. Like, what do you want to go? Sushi. Oh, of course you want to go to sushi. Let's go to sushi. I love sushi so much. Oh my god. Like, give me some sushi. Like. Oh, have you ever been to a sushi restaurant? Like, what the fuck? Why does every woman in L.A. want to eat fucking raw fish?
Why do you think that is?
Because it's what they think every other woman in L.A. does.
Really?
Yes.
I thought it was because it was yummy.
It's good, but it's not like, fuck, let's always go eat sushi. Like, fuck that. Like, you don't you wake up one day and just think, okay, I might even still want fish. I just want it cooked.
Are you a
today.
Red meat man?
Yes.
Yeah, me too.
I'm an everything man. So I ate the horse meat, and it was all right. But,
Well, you predominantly what do you eat, like, do you have, like, one thing you eat, like, almost above everything else during in your diet? Do you eat fairly clean? Do you, like, nutrition-minded or flavor-minded?
Try to be both. I mean, I do really enjoy the red meat. Hamburger or steak or, and you can do a lot. It's pretty versatile too.
Especially you can do after you lift, right?
Yeah,
it's the most satisfying food.
The one thing is okay. There's that, or if I just had just some serious piece of ass, the very next thing I want,
fist to hand.
The very next thing I want is a fucking steak. Hamburger. I have left apartments at odd hours of the night, just tracking down any 24-hour. Carl's Jr., Jack in the Box, anything, because I need a fucking hamburger immediately.
Man, after I saw Food Inc., I'm done with the late night hamburgers. I tried to eat some chicken sandwiches. I'll eat like a Carl's Jr. chicken sandwich or something like that, but the burgers, it's either In-N-Out or Wendy's, and the other way I'm tapping out. I can't do McDonald's burgers. They're too fucking gross.
I almost never eat any of that crap. I'll be honest. Like, if I'm gonna have a burger, there's plenty of places I could go that I know the meat is a lot healthier and everything.
Yeah.
And I understand also the idea of keeping costs. I go so far overboard in terms of what corporations will try to do to save a buck.
Yeah.
And basically, you threw all integrity out the window. So
yeah,
I can't support that.
Yeah, what is that? That's not even a burger. Have you seen those pictures where they could take a McDonald's burger and then they track it for 6 months and it doesn't rot? It just sits there?
Well, I did read about that because my buddy did the same thing in his gym, CrossFit Brad. He took the burger and just left it there and it didn't. And then, so I read something about, well, it's got so much salt in it. So it's more of a salt thing.
Really?
And they said the weirdest thing about it isn't really the burger, it's the bun. That thing not molding, that's the most fucked up part of the whole thing.
Really?
And you should really be the most worried about putting that in your mouth.
Really?
That fucking crazy bun.
I didn't even think of that bun. I figure that bun's just a piece of bread.
Now, I mean, you can salt meat to a degree that it keeps for a long time. They've been doing that forever. I mean,
sure.
But, I mean, long before we had refrigeration, all meat was salted pretty much.
Right.
So... And you can make it into jerky. That bun, we don't really... Bread doesn't have that kind of shelf life.
Yeah, what is that?
Ever.
What are they putting in there? Some insane preservatives?
I don't know. Something, yeah. Something totally gnarly that you really probably shouldn't be putting in your body.
It's amazing, but in order to feed the amount of people that we have packed into cities, like you just drove here from Orange County, think of that crazy drive, which is one of the worst drives in the country as far as like population centers. I mean, that is an enormous amount of people from the 405 to the 580. That whole area that's an incredible amount of people.
And you're going through all these different demographics the whole way.
And they all need food.
Everybody needs food.
They need food.
And I think that there is a, like, okay. Penn and Teller, I love watching Penn and Teller bullshit, and they had their whole thing on organic food and about how, the various chemicals also determine whether something can be called organic or not. But that some certified or things that can be considered organic in terms of pesticides are actually worse than the things that they've created since then. Well, fine. But there's that fine line where if you, like, you can take it to this point, okay, to a degree, but... People take it that, you know, they want to save that extra, like, 30 cents on the dollar, or 3 cents on the dollar, a half a cent on the dollar. And, like, pink slime, I mean, that should just never be.
Pink slime?
Yeah, that paste that they throw into the burgers that. Or like all the really gnarly.
They treat it with like ammonia.
Yeah, see, I mean,
you just to kill all the bacteria that's in it. It's like the idea that that's a burger is ridiculous. That ain't a burger. Have you seen what they do to fast food burgers? The fillers and all the different things they add. I love In-N-Out. I'll fuck an In-N-Out burger up. I'll have a 3x3 with cheese and raw eggs.
Yeah.
Do you?
Yeah.
Do you like Five Guys? Five Guys.
I do like Five Guys.
Pretty fucking good.
Yeah.
I might like them better than In-N-Out. I think they got a tastier bun.
Yeah. My buddy was going, no, In-N-Out's better. I will say that they're
equal but different.
Equal but different.
Both pretty fucking badass.
Did we just say separate but different?
Equal but different.
Separate but equal?
Equal but different. But that's true. They're equally delicious but in a different way.
In a different way. I'm a big umami fan. I'm really on a hunt to find the best ultimate cheeseburger you can get anywhere. And umami's definitely got a great one. Father's Office is fantastic. And I'll spend the $12 on a hamburger.
There's a place in Atlanta called the Laughing Skull. And they got some cheeseburger place above it that is, God, I can't remember. Do you remember that place, Brian? The Laughing Skull?
Yeah.
What's the cheeseburger place?
I don't remember.
Torsion, Fusion?
Yeah,
fucking,
Fusion, I think.
I don't remember. Whatever it is, if you're in Atlanta, it's above the Laughing Skull. It's the fucking greatest cheeseburger place on the face of the earth. They had great buffalo burgers with blue cheese and just gourmet slamming cheeseburgers. Oh. Real meat, cooked the way you want. You want it rare, they give it to you rare. You want it medium rare, you can trust it. It's like, oh, it was so goddamn good.
That sounds
good.
Awesome. There's a place in Chicago I got to get to. It's all heavy metal themed called Kuma's Corner. They have a Slayer burger, a Goat Whore burger, a Lair of the Minotaur.
What's in a Goat Whore burger?
It was like a lamb patty or something with ground beef or sirloin. And these are like gourmet, like on pretzel rolls with goat cheese on top and all that stuff. I mean, all baked to put like the Lair of the Minotaur one has these sauteed pear slices that have been thrown on top of gorgonzola and all this. I mean, just
damn.
And you have dirty metalheads in there listening to, like, you know, Immortal and Death, and they're just pounding
eating the greatest burgers ever, in the known world. Well, that's a weird combination that the dude is, like, into death metal and just exquisite gourmet burgers.
Yeah.
That's so rare.
That's exactly why I want to go there.
How did you become a big death metal head?
I started off just getting into metal from the classic rock side of things. My dad used to play guitar just for fun, play blues and classic rock, and grew up listening to Sabbath and Led Zeppelin and the Beatles and what have you. And then I found, like, this kid that was the son of my babysitter. He introduced me basically to Iron Maiden, and that was like, oh fuck yeah. And of course, at like 6 years old, seeing Eddie, the mascot, was like the coolest thing ever. Like, oh, right. Look at that fucking dude. He's
If you haven't seen Iron Maiden, it's like the monster-looking zombie thing.
Yeah, he's like the zombie.
Eddie, that's what they call him?
Right, Eddie. And I remember that he had this Killers shirt from the album Killers, and it's got Eddie, he's like holding like some limp woman in his hand with like a bloody hatchet in the other. And I'm just going, that is so badass. And then I remember from there was like Metallica and Slayer and Megadeth and Anthrax and then that progressed to, I remember hearing Sepultura, and that was harder and heavier. And then I found this band Bolt Thrower, and I'm like, what the fuck is that? The covers are so amazing, and they're from these Games Workshop, like Warhammer 40K stuff. So I'm like, I already like that, so let me check this out. Oh, God, this is the heaviest, most crushing music I've ever heard in my life.
It sounds like, what does it sound like?
It sounds like an entire army of guitars coming up over the top of a ridge and then all fist-fucking you all at once. Pretty much. While Marshall amps drop out of the sky continuously on top of you, they're just raining on you, being ridden by, like, trolls.
Is that the kind of shit you listen to in your car?
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't blow my tire out, though. I can't blame the music.
Oh, it didn't blow your
tire out? No, it didn't, no.
What, is that, you listen to it when you work out, too?
I listen to it all the time, but it really depends on my mood. So, I can listen to, the only thing that I don't have on my iPod is country music.
Really?
I can't get with country music.
You never heard any
or reggae. From?
No reggae?
No reggae.
No Bob Marley?
I could probably buy one reggae compilation album and have all the essentials for any reggae song ever created ever, and I'm okay.
There's like 10 really good ones, right? Could You Be Loved? That's a great jam.
Yes.
That's a great jam. I Shot Get the Sheriff is not too bad. Get Up, Stand Up. Yeah, but it gets a little repetitive.
Hey, I've heard... okay, got it. All right, yeah. Now what are you singing about today? I and I what? All right, cool.
Yeah, but at least it's better than Hawaiian music. Hawaiian music is fucking brutal. I love Hawaii, and Hawaiian, they're very proud people, and I would understand if you got offended, and when I go to Hawaii next time, people are pissing me, but the reality is, you're there, you got a perfect rock,
uh-huh.
You are in the perfect climate, the most beautiful place in the world, and you're playing a song like, and she's selling her papaya, and the red and green banana. Like, think of all the shit you could be playing right now. You could be playing Whole Lot of Love. You could be playing Led Zeppelin, okay? They could. You guys could have...
AC/DC.
Yeah, Leonard Skinner. You could be playing some real fucking music. This is ridiculous. Like, how is this still around? How has this not been changed by the... You know, the introduction of other Western civilizations.
Disney songs and then just redoing them.
Yeah, you need to let that song go. That song should never be sung again. That song's ridiculous. All the great songs, but it's like one of those island things, you know? Like, they like to keep a lot. Yeah, oh, Jesus.
What always cracked me up is you look through, like, the magazine. I remember flying to Hawaii for the first time to go fight Super Bowl 13. And I'm looking through the in-flight magazine, and it's got a little section for all the music, and it's got like, oh, here's the, you know, Channel 4's locals. And you look, and there was like this gnarly, big, jacked up dude with a big handlebar, like the gnarly biker mustache, you know, whatever. It's like, Oofa Oofa Moofa Loofa is his name. And then you go and you listen to his music, it's like,
yeah.
It's like, you have the sweetest voice ever. I bet your blowjobs are like pancakes right in the morning.
Oh,
like with strawberries and syrup while I'm just dripping off the plate.
I bet he massages your shoulders while he's sucking your dick.
Yeah, I bet he does. I bet he just about pulls him out of socket. Because he's like 470 pounds, 8 feet tall, and used to play, you know, center for the fucking NFL.
It's just bad music for the greatest place on earth. It doesn't
make any
sense.
Warrior culture too. The softest, most chill music.
Yeah,
like, just most like, hey dude, it's all good.
Sweet Home Alabama. Do you imagine it? They just killed the whole red and green banana shit. We're gonna take 5 minutes while we're resting. Leonard Skinner's gonna come up here and show you about the fuck he's done. That would be hilarious, man.
Oh, that would be cool.
Maybe it's... I always thought that maybe it was a strategy to keep people from moving to Hawaii. Just keep playing that shitty music and, like, I can get tired of this music. Because if you were, like, on the beach and they had, like, the best bands in the country all were in Hawaii, you're like, why don't we live in Hawaii?
this is so much better. It's warmer and cool. It's warm, you know,
the music's awesome. And they're already upset, right? You spend a lot of time in Hawaii. There's a lot of people get upset.
They're not
people.
Happy about all of us Hollies coming down there. Or actually, really, anybody from the mainland, they're just like, why don't you stay there?
Really? Even if you're a Hawaiian blood from the, and you live in the mainland? You
see, I can't speak on that, but as far as if you're just not Hawaiian.
Did you ever live there?
No, I spent time there. And, you know, amazingly, Hawaiians are great to me. I love Hawaii. I like island cultures at large. I think part of it is because I'm from a place like Seattle. And I have some country roots to me in terms of, like, I grew up, we go hunting and race cars and just all kinds of rednecky-ass shit.
In addition to
any of this high art bullshit that my mom got me sort of weaned on. And love of, like, modern architecture and culture and the classics and reading. But down there, they're like, oh, no, you're, like, really down-to-earth, dude. You're cool. You're all right. You're cool. You're a cool alley. The rest of those fuckers, like...
Well, I'm sure. I mean, if you see the average douchebag American tourist, you know, rude to I wouldn't want them in my fucking country either. Especially a lot of people, you know how much I'm fucking spending this vacation, you better all kiss my ass. One of those Jersey douchebags. Could you imagine one of those Jersey Shore type, or, you know, Housewives of Jersey type douchebags?
Or you could even take the Jersey Shore of the West Coast, someone from Huntington Beach.
Sure, exactly.
Yeah, one of those assholes run down there, like, bro, you know how much I do? Bro, I just popped how much money on these bottles, man? Bro.
Yeah, that's perfect. That is a really good impression of one of those assholes.
All you gotta do is say bro 17 times in every sentence, and you've got it down.
they all need to chill the fuck out.
Get more tribal tattoos, bro.
Josh Barnett, we need to get those motherfuckers in the gym. They need to get strangled. They need to get humiliated. They need to get...
Bro, but I'm a case fighter, bro.
Brought down to earth so they can calm the fuck down and just be a little nice.
It takes so much more than that nowadays. It really does, because so many guys, especially on the West Coast now, you know, like the West Coast douchebag, they go to the gym every now and again. They definitely lift. Mm-hmm. They go there, they go train some jiu-jitsu plays, they train whatever they do, they train, and then I train Dopo,
right.
I train UFC. And they get in there, they never really, and some of them fight a little bit. Now, granted, they're not fighters, they're just guys that had a couple fights, which is a big difference.
Right.
But even getting humbled and humiliated in the gym?
Not enough.
Because outside of the gym, they're like, well, that's a different place. That's a whole other... That's a some sort of country that only exists there. And then when I'm out in the general populace, when I'm being an asshole on the streets of like Main Street and PCH, like that's it's different.
That is a big problem down there. There is a lot of those guys, right?
There is, and there's. I mean, douchebags are douchebags of every genre. Of every genre, you know. And every douchebag has this thing. You got your hipster douchebag that thinks like they're so above you and they're so cultured, and everything they say has so much fucking meaning behind it and so much deeper. It's like, no, you're just as bullshit as anybody else. In fact, more so because you don't even realize that the shit you say doesn't matter. Or, you know, then you've got. You got the MMA douchebag who like runs around, wants to make sure everybody knows that they train and that they can fight and all that kind of bullshit. And you've got your club douchebag. You've got douchebags of all sorts. I mean, everybody takes it.
There's money douchebags. There's fitness douchebags. Yeah. There's just
fitness douchebags are great. You can't even have a conversation about anything but their diet. I mean, that's just wonderful. That's how I want to spend the next 30 minutes sitting at a table with someone that's talking about how many, like, grains of rice they can have in every meal.
And it's weird when it's for like a fitness competition. Like, what are you doing? Well, it's like, you know, you sort of do, you know, different poses and, you know, you do like maybe a little bit of gymnastics. Like, are you a cheerleader? That seems a lot like cheerleading, man. What are you
a little bit like cheerleading,
what the fuck is going on here? Doing a fitness competition?
Is there a guy with a megaphone yelling at the same time? Or
are you supporting a team?
Yeah. Oh, how about it? Look at some of those fitness chicks. They're ridiculous bodies, right?
Yeah.
But even with, if the minute like they step off the stage, they're like, I'm fat, don't look at me, I'm fat. Like, they got this huge body dysmorphia. Or, you know, they, it's like, hey, how you doing? Hey, what's up? Hi. Oh, you're bomb. You're good looking. Let me talk. Oh, I don't want to talk about, you know, boneless chicken breasts. No. You know what?
You get bored.
I've got somewhere to be, but I'll be right back. Don't worry about that.
Thinking of doing supersets in the morning. Thinking of running hills.
Don't fucking do it. I don't want to talk about it. Jesus Christ. How could anybody consider that to be something interesting? Yeah, we have that. We have an understanding in that I know what a superset is and I ran a hill. But I don't do it for entertainment. Like, I don't like, oh, you know.
I've never understood people that are into, like, I can understand wanting to be in shape, but I can't understand, like, CrossFit competitions and stuff like that.
To be the best in the world at working out?
I want to be the best in the world at doing cleans, you know?
but not an Olympic.
Right. No. Like, 100 cleans in a row with 50 pounds. You know, like, what are you doing? What's going on here for real?
It's like, oh, bodybuilding, that's so garbage. Like, okay, hold on. Everybody has a way, you know, they're using the way that they're going to lift for a specific purpose. Now, I'll say, I think bodybuilding is pointless. Like, what's the point of putting all that time and effort to look, to just look a certain way and never use it? And then you've got CrossFit, which is the same thing, exact same thing, but just they're in actual better overall shape.
Yeah.
And, you know, they use it, but they only use it for more working out.
Yeah.
So
it's weird.
They're just basically just jerking off the whole time. That's all anybody is doing. They're just jerking themselves off.
Yeah.
And, you know, okay, well, why don't you bodybuild because, you know, you got to look better on the screen, or do powerlifting because you want to be stronger, and then do, you know, a CrossFit, like, whatever workout for your anaerobic endurance and and all this, and then like take it and then go play a game.
Yeah.
Go play football with your friends,
or
go hiking, or climb a mountain, or go do grappling or something.
Yeah.
Or,
yeah.
Take all of that and then apply it into a skilled deal. I saw this video where it was like the gist of it was these two NFL dudes are boxers, or they're NFL guys. Former NFL, they just come from boxing practice, and they did some CrossFit workout, some CrossFit gym. in LA, and then they did it in X amount of time, and here's our CrossFit guys that are here all the time. The two dudes, the two CrossFit kids did it faster than the other guys, and I'm like, but they can catch a fucking football.
Yeah.
You can just run around with your socks pulled up to your knees like an asshole. That's all you can do.
Yeah, you can do 100 kipping pull-ups.
Great.
So what?
Great. Well,
no one's trying to stop you from doing
it. You know what? 100,000 people are not going to fill into a stadium and pay you millions of dollars to watch you do kipping pull-ups.
Well, sports are about someone trying to do something and someone else trying to stop them from doing something. It's a multifaceted sort of a thing.
It's competition.
When you're doing a bunch of chin-ups, no one's stopping you. It's just you doing a bunch of chin-ups, and it's kind of a weird halfway sport. I mean, I can see how it's athletic. I can see how it requires willpower and discipline.
Guys, it's impressive. Amazing shit.
Yeah, it's impressive when guys can do incredible shit. But I would rather learn a martial art. I would rather learn how to play a game. I'd rather learn to do something. I'd rather learn how to play hockey. Anything. It's just got to be more input. There's more going on than just standing there doing cleans.
I don't get it either. I think like that's the shit you do to help you be better at the real thing that you do.
Yeah, the guy I was talking to about it, he's like, well, I just like competition, man. I just like competition. I'm like, you're not a competition. Go to jiu-jitsu class. Get some.
I like grab a go box.
Really? Yeah, really.
I like go join an intramural basketball league.
Yeah. Do something where you fucking play pool. Go play pool in a tournament.
Or just do CrossFit. Be in shape. And that be the way that you stay in shape, and then that be it. Like, don't go running around telling the whole world about it. don't look at somebody else and be like, well, when I did that, you know, when I did Francine and when I did Zelda, like, I did it in 17 minutes, and that's, I don't care. Nobody cares.
They have, like, different names.
They're all named, they're named, they have different names. It's like Tommy and Rasputin and... and McKeesle Dick.
They all have like a righteous indignation when they order the green tea at Starbucks.
But that's, and I don't even, and I think the root of all that kind of stuff isn't doing CrossFit. It isn't doing any, it could be any, you could substitute CrossFit with anything else.
Right.
It's just that something comes along, and it gets to a certain level where people start jumping on it because, one, whether it's good or it's bad, it's something that's new and it's different. And it is a change from what the norm was. So therefore, everybody feels like they're improving who they are. They're growing, and now they're a part of something that's more special. And therefore, then that by a group gets taken way out of context. And then the after effects of that are people becoming douchebags.
Mm-hmm.
There's CrossFit douchebags. there's a douchebag.
He's broken down mathematically.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, this, by the way, a lot of nice CrossFit people, too. And there's a lot of people that don't want to just go to a gym and just lift weights and be bored, so they take CrossFit.
People like the news. You always remember the shitty stuff.
Of course, yeah. There's a lot of good stuff about CrossFit, folks. We're not shitting on CrossFit.
Working out and staying healthy is awesome. I love that CrossFit has looked back to older, simpler ways of training and brought that to the populace. I think that's great. You know, strongman type stuff, old school, some of the old school thought processes of just, you know, grab heavy shit and lift it.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's a lot of flawed reasoning, in my opinion, behind some of that too. And also, like, I get so sick of the, I'm training like a fighter. Like, no, you're not. You're not a fighter.
Yeah, no one's beating you up every day.
It's not the same.
No one's trying to choke the life out of your brain. No.
Yeah, and if you go to kickboxing class at night, that doesn't make you a fighter either. Like, fighters are fighters. People that do martial arts, you know, they train. Training is, just know what, just be realistic. And that, there's nothing wrong with that. You know, if you're not going to be a fighter, even though you train in martial arts, that's okay. Like, people talk to me about coming to train at the gym or whatever, and I said, you know what, don't do it because you want to be a fighter. If you really want to be a fighter, then be a fighter, and be a fighter to every level that you need to, which means you're probably never going to amount to anything with fighting, because the odds are totally against you. But that's not the reason you do it, not because of success that you think you're going to get from it. You do it because you're driven, and you love it, and you have to do it, and that's the only way that you can ever fully realize the utmost of your potential. More people are going to fail than are going to succeed. But honestly, if you are better when you end it than when you started, and you don't have any regrets, then you absolutely succeeded. You didn't get the medals, you didn't get the money, but you took you as you stood here today and became something better and more encompassing and have lived a life experience because you decided to do something and do it like you mean it. And that's hard for people to wrap their heads around, that, you know, I go into the gym, I just want to be better, that when I step off the mat than I was when I stepped on it. And some days aren't so great. Some days are amazing. And I also have like this huge mean streak. Like I hate losing and whatever. But I also, and as much as that is always a part of who I am, I have to temper that, and I have to look at all the data that comes from everything that I do when I'm in the gym, and then break it down and then be more effective with it. I can't just think, well, that guy, he was out jabbing me today. And I mean, in my head, I'm thinking, I'm going to jab the living shit out of that fucker until his dick falls off. That's how much I'm going to jab that dude. I'm going to jab him so many times that he's never going to want to get in the ring with me ever again, ever, period.
You think this is about training exercise?
Yes. But I also have to sit back, but I'll go, why was he able to jab me? What did I do wrong? What did I do right? Why is his jab so effective? How do I take that and make it mine? Or how do I analyze that and see the patterns before they become a problem for me?
That's very important, isn't it, in the development of a martial artist, to see someone at an incredibly high level and realize that that is where the mark is set.
You can't be the best at everything. There's somebody out there. There's probably plenty of people out there that I can just annihilate and use as a toothpick, use their bones as toothpicks when I'm done with them. But chances are, out of that group of people that I'm talking about, there are people that, within that, there's things that they do better than I do. That may be that one thing, or maybe a couple things, but they're better at it than I am, by far. So I could look at them and take something from it. It doesn't matter how much better of a fighter I am. There's so much to be seen or taken in. There's a million ways that the body can move. And one way, and I realize that there's some things I'm never going to be great at because of physicality, physical limitations, injuries, whatever. It's just, that's okay. Like, I'm never going to be able to do rubber guard because my knees are too fucked up.
What's wrong with your knees?
Oh, I've torn ligaments in them, and they're just, the meniscus has been repaired on the right before, and they're just, they won't take it, you know. If I pull on them too hard like that, it'll start to loosen up.
Well, you're a leg lock master.
Yes.
That's that's got to be kind of tricky to be a guy with, injured knees and be a guy who injures knees.
Right. I just have a very good feel for it, and I know what I can get away with. And I know a lot of leg locks, your ankle goes before your knees do. Although my ankles are not the greatest thing either. But you just sort of understand what you're dealing with and then go from there. But I have, nonetheless, since I know that I'm never going to be someone that can effectively like be a good rubber guard guy, I pay attention because like Shayna Baszler likes to use those setups. So she's working on something, I can go to her and go, okay, look at your, get the angle like this because look at the way that puts your body weight and your pressure against their joint there. And this is where now you're creating a weakness in them at this angle so you can defeat that angle here. Or, hey, this guy's really good at rubber guard. Now watch how he's gonna try and get these angles and these positions on you because this is where it's gonna take you out of position. So this is how you're gonna have to defeat that because fulcrums and levers. It's all relative.
Do you work on your flexibility a lot?
I do.
Yeah.
It's just hard. It's hard to get there, and I'm older. And
how much of a fighter's success do you think is a timing issue, like getting involved in a sport at the right age, the right time to get excellent at something? How much of it is bulldog determination and just the ability to learn from your mistakes and press on despite the bad feelings?
It's mental.
Yeah?
The mental aspect takes the most of it because that's going to – the mental aspect is the thing that is going to not only make you want to fight when you want to quit, but it'll also make you step back and realize that all these things, all these circumstances came about within these moments and how to take them, change them, understand them, and make the appropriate changes and additions and subtractions from your game to be better. You have to be analytical like that, and you have to remove emotion from that from those circumstances, because once you get emotionally attached and worked up about it, then it will defeat your ability to be as useful as possible. And especially in the case of a lot of people, most people are never going to be really successful with fighting, especially if they choose it as their occupation. It's not going to make the money for them that they want. It's not, but it shouldn't deter somebody. They should just do it because they love it. I was watching a lecture by Alan DeBane, I think his name is, something like that, on pessimism. the philosophical lecture on pessimism and about how one of the reasons why you get so upset about things and you get so worked up is because you have these expectations that things are always going to work out well. But the reality of it is most things don't work out at all. In fact, there's almost always more failure than there is success. But you're so primed for success. You have such a belief that this will always work in your favor. It's like his example was of traffic. I mean, you get so mad and angry and honking and pissed off behind the wheel in traffic. But the thing is that there's always traffic. Traffic is not the exception, it is the norm. So when you encounter it, why should you be so mad? It's always there, and it always occurs. So it's more unusual for there to not be any traffic at all. But we have this concept in our head that even getting behind the wheel and driving down the road, it's all going to work out for us. Instead of us having to waste just like every other schmo because things are the way they are.
Yeah, that's a funny way of looking at it. It's we can't, one thing is that we can't appreciate failure as a tool for success. You know, because every time that I've ever, especially as a comedian, one of the best, most motivating factors is bombing on stage. Mm-hmm. When you eat a dick on stage, you never want that to fucking happen again. And you'll tighten everything up. You'll go over your material with a fine-tooth comb. Think about your delivery. You listen to recordings. You don't want that feeling.
How long does a joke suck before it becomes good?
You never know, man. Never know. Sometimes you'll come up with a joke and it's perfect the moment it comes up. And then other times it might take a year for a joke to evolve. I remember Louis C.K. was telling me that Chris Rock has this one really controversial bit. He goes, I love black people, I hate niggas. You ever heard that bit?
It's I don't think I have.
Brilliant bit about mm-hmm. it's the difference between, in his mind, a black guy and a nigga. And it took a long time to work, apparently. It took like a year. It was bombing for a year. He would go on and do it, and he just couldn't get it to work. Mm. And then it eventually became like a closing bit. It became a bit that it was just a destroying, perfect, old-school, classic bit. But it's one of those things where every bit's got its own timeline. Every bit has its own shelf life, too. Some bits are timeless, and some bits, they're only good. They're a monster for 6 months. Maybe it's topical. Maybe things change. You can't make a joke about VHS tapes anymore. Nobody gives a shit.
No,
you know
right.
what I mean? Time moves on. You know, I mean, I used to have a great joke about Nextel phones. You know, nobody gives a fuck about Nextel phones. You know, it's some of them last for a long time, and some of them don't. And some of them are done. The moment you say it the first time on stage,
that's its lifespan. It's yeah. funny only the first time hearing it,
sure.
and that is it.
There's some of that, and there's some bits that are, they're a fully formed bit the moment out of your mouth, and they last for years. It's totally different, you know. Just it completely depends on the subject, depends on what you're trying to say, how silly or complex it is. Mm-hmm. Usually the more complex
depends on
idea.
I imagine also what bits led into that,
sure, yeah,
what bits go from it,
exactly,
and you know, what not just the jokes being said but what tone is being said.
Yeah,
so all of a sudden you're going one direction, you change gears. Sometimes that immediate hard stop change catches people off guard, and
exactly,
and it makes them laugh, or at least, you know, it gets their mind spinning in a way that sets up the next stuff, or sometimes it just confuses them and fucks the whole rest of the next, you know, 10 minutes of jokes up.
Just knowing that, you could be a comedian. You could easily be a comedian. Just having this conversation and knowing that. I always tell people, it's not that complicated, but it's not easy. It's a weird,
closest
bizarre
I've ever
trick.
Been to a comedian was sitting with a friend who was a comedian, and they were going to go on, and I'm just hanging in the, and it's this pre-show, and a bunch of us are all just hanging out in the aisleway, and I'm just being me and cracking stupid jokes and doing wordplay and whatever. Someone's like, you know, you working tonight? I'm like, I got a little boner, and I was like, very little. And I just thought, no, I'm not a comedian at all. Well, you think I'm funny. I like that.
You can do it. It's not that complicated. It's, you know, it's almost like a normal skill that everyone sort of has in a small form. Most people at least try to have like one or two things they can say that are witty,
sure,
in their life. You know, and it's just a matter of cultivating those and becoming like a witty farmer.
How many people can keep their nerve too, though?
It's a little of that, yeah.
Because I tell you what, if I had to get on stage and deliver stand-up, that would freak me the fuck. Way more fearful than fighting even five guys all at one time. Like, that's okay by me. Like, no,
you say
no big
that,
deal.
But once you do it a couple times, it would be easy.
Dude, I have been in some of these public speaking scenarios where people, oh, you're so great. And I go, I'm shitting myself. It's so scary.
It's crazy shitting yourself. It doesn't make any sense. Mm-mm. Like, there's no real fear.
Exactly. And that's a hard thing to get past, is that in my mind, I know that all this fear is all self-created. If everybody thought I was an idiot, who cares?
Right.
It only matters what I think. If I don't think I'm an idiot and I'm okay with it, then fuck you all. Like, go fucking, you can all burn. I don't give
a
shit.
Doesn't it take a long time to get to that point of comfort, though? That is part of being a man. One of the most important parts of being a man is getting to a point where you genuinely, truly don't give a fuck if someone doesn't like what you like. It's like, I know what I like. I don't give a fuck. Like, yes. That, very few people really don't give
a
fuck.
And even once we get to that point, where is the one area, well, a couple areas, I should say, where we make those exceptions?
Pussy.
One, obviously, yes.
Pussy. Pussy breaks you.
Pussy ruins the mind.
Breaks a man.
Oh, pussy, you're tragic.
It can break a man.
Pussy, you know, I was, this song I've been listening to, From Every Time I Die, I got this great lyric. It says, it's not lack of ambition that keeps, it's women not lack of ambition that keeps good men bedridden.
It's true. Yeah, I know dudes that it becomes such a massive part of their life that it eclipses all else.
I have a friend. I've seen him, like, glued to his fucking phone. Mm. It's almost, it should be integrated into his body. He's on it so much. And yet, it's constantly chattered, little texts here, there. Oh, well, you know, an hour's gone by on this one, so I need to send a response there. And just constant communication between women the whole time, because that's the amount of effort it takes to bang that much fucking tail. And I remember sitting there thinking, I don't have the patience for this at all. Like, it'll just get to a certain point that if I deal with enough stupid shit, I'm like, you're a fucking idiot.
Yeah.
Get off of my fucking phone. Lose my number. I don't want to talk to you anymore. It's hard enough for me to even have a conversation with you with my thumbs, let alone have to think about the idea of putting aside a block of time to run into you, to work you up to the point of trying just to have sex with you.
Ugh. Yeah, it gets to a weird point where some people just want to chat all day. What's up? Like, you get a text like, what's up? Nothing. What's up with you? Thinking of going to the gym?
Okay. Then fucking go.
Then fucking go. Cut this shit.
But don't tell me how it turns out. Yeah. You know, that's what your Facebook is for.
Yeah,
to tell me that you're going to go to the gym. To tell me that how good of a workout you had.
You got to meet up with them face to face. And you listen, time is very, very precious for me. Don't be
a vagina, man. It takes a certain amount of, and this is probably why I'm a single man. But
that's also why men try so hard to be bad motherfuckers. They try so hard to be bad motherfuckers. Partially, one of the reasons to dominate is to be more attractive to women.
Yes,
naturally.
But I got to tell you, the difference between being a real bad motherfucker and being an outwardly seemingly bad motherfucker is night and day. If you're an outwardly, if you seem like you're a bad motherfucker, most people think you are.
Right.
The real bad motherfuckers, nobody really ever knows it. And they don't have to tell the world. They don't have to. It's like someone asked me the other day about if I ever get into street fights or anything like that. And I go, no, because the people that even when I want to fight them, they won't. And they're like, who would fight you? And I go, they don't know who I am. I'm not famous. I'm not a celebrity.
You are amongst martial artists.
Give me my little pocket of people, yeah, I'm fucking somebody there. But in
on
general,
SureDog, you're huge.
Yeah, on SureDog, I'm so popular. I'm so amazingly, I'm just all flammable. But in the rest of the world, nobody knows who the fuck I am. I'm okay with that. So, you know, I've had guys eyeball me, whatever. I've seen the fucking the signs of it. You think if anybody knows when a fight's going to happen, it'd be a fighter. So,
right.
When I go, or if someone's being a dick deliberately in my presence or to a woman that's around or whatever, and I step up and I say something, and they're like, I go, people don't want to fight me. And they go, well, because you're big. I go, no, it's got nothing to do with any of that. It's because when you look into somebody's eyes, you can tell who really wants to fucking fuck people up and who really doesn't. And I don't get upset. I don't yell. I don't scream. I don't have to do any of that. I just look at them. I tell them how it's going to be, and I let them know if this is what we want to do. Like, I'll enjoy it. Like, let's please make this happen. I've said to one guy, hey, I'm like, how many friends you got? He's like, why? I go, because you don't have enough. Let me just tell you that much. Or I told one dude, like, you don't know anybody that knows anybody that knows anybody that knows anybody that can kick my ass. So I don't know what you're going to do here, bud. You're in a bad way.
That's hilarious.
I laughed at a guy at an Anthrax concert. I'm standing there with a girl, and he keeps trying to nudge through. People keep trying to nudge through, like, right where we're at. And I'm like, of all places, you see a dude and a chick, go somewhere else. So I'm standing right there, and I decide that's it. They're going to have to start going around, so I keep my elbows out. I feel this dude bumping into me on the right side. He can't get through, so then he tries to get through on the left, but I'm just standing tall. So he's trying to get around it, but he can't, and it's like pushing him over, him running himself into my own elbow. And then he starts getting mad. I'm just trying to – he's yelling at me about something. I'm going, what? He's like, I'm just trying to get through, man. I said this, that, and I said blah, blah, blah. I like it. I go, Anthrax is playing. I can't fucking hear what you're saying. And he's looking at me crazy. And I go, just walk up to the front. And he gets all fucking wild-eyed. And he's looking at me crazy. And I go, is this what you want to do? Yeah, I just start laughing at him. I go, you just need to keep moving. And eventually the girl in front reaches up and grabs a hold of his arm and pulls down and goes, don't do this. Really don't do this. I'm just smiling the whole time. And he just fucking, of course, he leaves. It's all about the posturing.
You get upset, man. Look at you. You're reoccurring this in your mind. You're recreating this in your mind. I can see your pulse quicken, your testosterone.
The problem
raising.
Is that I stay calm, mm-hmm. but
you carry a grudge. You carry a story inside of
you. Oh, I'm
a
Scorpio. So apparently, according to all the books that they say out there, I carry grudge. But it's
by
also.
The way, that's total stripper talk.
Yeah, it is.
I'm a Scorpio.
Yeah.
I'm spicy.
I was a Sissy. But the thing is, I love being in those violent confrontations.
Why do you like that? Is it because when you were picked on when you were a kid, you still harbor some resentment towards people that would fuck with you?
My mom was
because you're a nice
me.
Guy. You would never fuck with anybody. But if someone was fucking with you, it's almost like now you have a license to pay back.
I can't put a real finger on it. It was, I knew that I enjoyed fighting when I was a kid, like being in the fights. I didn't start the fights, but if you gave me a reason, cool. And then my mom said I was the angriest kid ever. She said, well, when I was born, I came out frowning. I looked like Ron Paul. And I fucking, she tried to hug me and I stiff-armed her.
That's hilarious.
And she said it broke her fucking heart. I wouldn't let my own mother hold me.
Wow.
And I was yellow and I was jaundiced and I was an asshole apparently. I just came out. I was like, ah.
Fucking.
Wow. And she said as a kid, I blew up. About if I got angry, I got so angry. It wasn't like temper tantrum angry. It was like fumingly raging, violent, like flames and daggers.
I wonder if that's connected between your health at birth, you know, being in poor health at birth and being like brought into this world in a bad situation where you're uncomfortable, yellow and jaundiced. I wonder if that like set the stage for an angry, or maybe you got some Viking genes, dude.
I might.
I got some Viking genes in there.
I think I bought those.
Where are you from?
I bought those at Nordstrom.
Are they true religion Viking jeans?
Viking
with
jeans.
With a Chuck Norris gusset?
Yeah. It's got horns and a beard on the crotch.
As long as it has plenty of like really big buttons, snaps, that uh-huh. are, like, intricately carved.
Some place to hang my hand
and
axe.
And it has to be pre-damaged.
Pre-damaged. Of course.
Up.
It has to look like it's already been through, you know, the poetic Eddas.
That's the only thing that's almost as gay as the sagging pants is the cut-up pants.
The chopped-up, distressed.
What the fuck is that? I went to one place and I was like, do you have any fucking pants that don't have holes in them? Can I just buy a pair of goddamn jeans? I like to have a regular pair of jeans. I'm not a child.
Like, sorry.
This is not going to last. This fake, worn-out jeans. This shit is temporary, and I'm not buying a fucking pair of jeans that are fake, worn out. It's one thing you wear a pair of jeans out. There's pride in that.
Yeah.
These are jeans I've had for 10 fucking years. They're comfortable as shit. Yeah, there's some holes in them, but I broke them in, man.
Yeah, I banged so-and-so in those jeans. I can't let them go.
There you go.
I don't know if I have any. I want to actually take that DNA test that tells you one. It can, yeah, tell you if, because I know I'm German, and I know I'm Irish and Cherokee Indian, and I've got some English in me. But
I know I got Neanderthal in me. I know I do.
Look at this brow ridge, dude. Fucking brother-in-law used to call me the eagle from the Muppets.
The eagle from the Muppets, a frown. I never even thought of that. The eagle is such a prominent frown.
Wow. Yeah, yeah. So. An asshole, Pat.
That's hilarious. That's a funny fucking visual.
But I want to take that test to also see if I got the warrior gene.
Mm. Oh, yeah, there is a warrior gene,
which is supposed
gene, right?
to make people kind of gnarly. And the thing is, Like, I don't have to have anything personal or any grudge. I don't have to be mad to get into a fight. Mm-hmm. But I... like,
enjoy it.
I even getting hit, hitting back, like, just the whole thing. Like, I know for me, fighting is the time I feel most alive and free in the entire world. Because I can go out there and do just about anything I can do with who I am, and no one's going to try and stop me.
Do you prefer old school rules? Do you prefer like Super Brawl rules?
I prefer...
for those who don't know, Super Brawl was soccer kicks, stomps...
I prefer headbutts,
elbows, no knuckles.
I understand the...
no gloves or gloves?
I think they wore gloves.
Do you prefer gloves or no gloves?
I prefer gloves, only for your own benefit. But
Or broken hands.
Yeah, but not to say that it's really been doing much for broken hands lately.
You just broke one of your hands.
Broke this one. Cormier's got a broken... a lot of broken hands in MMA.
Yeah.
But
super common, right?
Yeah, very.
Is there any way around that?
It's hard to say. I don't know if it's an equipment thing.
Is it possible to pad the gloves more, or is it just that
I'll say this. Like, one thing I noticed in Pride, there wasn't that many broken hands.
Yeah, well, I was asking that once, too. And I was saying, is it a better glove? Is the Pride glove a thicker glove?
Not necessarily.
Chael Sonnen would say, because it's all fixed fights.
Oh, of course. Yeah, you know, Chael Sonnen would say that.
He's so crazy when he says some of that shit about like Pride fights. Like, what? Come on, man! You know, some of that is just—it's
a brilliant stance to take. It's such a—it's such a fucking aggressive, just obnoxious thing to say. Someone is bound to get run. Now, who's dumber, the person that gets mad or the person who says it? The person that gets mad, clearly.
Of course, but the problem is there's a wee bit of truth in the fact that some fights in Pride were staged. Like, if you look at Coleman, Takata, it's pretty obvious there was something going on there. There's a few every now and then. I mean, you look at, like, Krokop Nogueira. That's a real fucking fight.
Yes.
There's no doubt about that. That's a real fucking fight. But, man, you watch Coleman tap out to that heel hook from Takata. You're like, that shit. Wait a minute.
Okay. Oh, dramatic pause.
I mean... it was ridiculous.
It's not the best example of Pride.
What was it like being... you were there in the golden era, man. I mean, you were there during the time when Pride was, in my opinion, like, put on some of the greatest shows in mixed martial arts history. The Pride Openweight Grand Prix. The Middleweight Grand Prix. I mean, you just look at just the historic fights like Minotauro versus Bob Sapp. I mean, there were some crazy historic fights from your era. That was... I mean, you were there, man. You were there for all that shit. What was that like?
Unfucking believable, dude.
What was it like performing for... what was the biggest crowd you did?
The biggest crowd I ever fought in front of was 50,000. The biggest crowd I ever, like, stepped out in front of and at least grabbed a mic was 93.
Jesus Christ.
And people want to tell you how big MMA is here, and I go, it is. And in America, it's... once it hits the media, the way American media is, things blow up in such a different capacity than they do in Japan. But... man, we were stepping in front of 30,000, 50,000 on a regular basis. I did a show with Hulk Hogan, you know. Hulk Hogan wrestling Chono and 55,000 people, and I fought Yoshiki Takahashi and defended my King of Pancras belt in the Tokyo Dome. I mean, that's...
wow.
It doesn't... those shows were on such a different level than what we see here in the States. And the feeling... of course the feeling is going to be different in terms of... the culturally, it's going to be way different because you have... Japan, this incredible homogeneous society with their ways and very specific versus America. So try and compare that sort of thing is not really fair.
Right.
Apples and oranges. It really is. People are different everywhere. You go hold those fights in Uganda or you hold them in Transylvania or whatever. They're always going to be different because people's cultures are different. But they felt so dynamic. Those shows, they were so big. It wasn't just the lights and it was the mood, the setting. When that music would start up and the lights would drop, dun, 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 and you're sitting in back and I'm fighting like ninth or something, but I'm all of a sudden, I'm just wired. I'm ready to go. I'm like, let's just fucking grab swords and start screaming and running down the ramp.
A lot of pageantry to those events too. I mean, look, I did not appreciate it sometimes when I was like, just get to the fucking fights already. These things are like 6 hours long and you were so jazzed up in the beginning, but looking back, man, when everybody would line up, you know, when they would introduce fighters one at a time and they would all line up, you're like, wow, this is is going to be a fucking epic night. It really did build it up. It really did make it more of a special event. You know, I mean, the UFC, they've kind of done away with even like some of the walk-ins. Like when we're pressed for time, sometimes guys are already in the cage and, you know, there's no walk-in at all.
Yeah, Bellator doesn't even have walk-ins,
nothing.
You know. And I, you know, a TV product definitely changes things. And in Japan, their TV system is way different than they, than we run over here.
Didn't Joaquin de Oliveira get burned
badly? Yeah, he was a big fan of Michael Jackson's, and he thought it would be, you know, real cool to set himself on fire before he went out and fought.
No, what
you
really
should have
happened?
Seen his Jerry curl before he lit up.
Oh, Jerry curl. How's another thing? How the fuck did that ever happen? How did Jerry curl and saggy jeans and pre-ripped jeans? How the fuck did those exist?
Nah, Joaquin got hit with, he was in the wrong spot. I don't know if the marker was wrong or he lost in translation, and he got hit with some pyrotechnics and it just lit him up. Now, thankfully, he, you know, with the burns, he was able to come back, and he even fought again in Pride.
Yeah.
And so I'm really, really glad that that was the case, because Joaquin de Oliveira, I mean, Lucha Libre legend, school NHB dude, that's fucking sad.
Yeah, that is sad. I mean, for a lot of people who don't know, he was one of the original guys back in the day. You know, he fought in some of those Vale Tudo events.
Yeah, Brazilian Vale Tudo, yeah.
Yeah, the bare knuckle, no rules events. They were so crazy, like when Gary Goodridge fought the Pedro and grabbed his dick. Literally reached into his pants. There was no rule against it. So reached into his pants and crushed his balls and his dick in his hands. Like, no one had ever thought of that. No one had ever... But Gary went so deep. He literally grabbed the guy's shit.
So deep.
Oh, God. And Gary Goodrich is a fucking arm wrestling champion with these gigantic arms. And just imagine that guy crushing your package.
I think he might have started off with a tickle.
Just to get a guy to let go of the underhooks.
Just a little bit. And then if tickle turned into a squeeze, and see the guy, but you know what? The guy didn't tap out immediately. It wasn't like
insane.
Giant black man, hand in my crotch, squeezing. Ah, fuck! No, it was.
Yeah. Maybe it's happened.
Maybe Gary had a finger, and you know, he was giving him a shocker, kind
massaging
of.
Massaging his prostate.
Yeah.
Maybe his balls were already numb. It's like he had taken so many
balls. Maybe that's why he tapped out, as Gary's, you know, he's like knuckles deep. And he's like, he's got two knuckles in there, and he's going, you know what, dude, you need to go get this thing checked out.
Gary, I know we're fighting everything, but I feel a lump.
Yeah, no, that's not, we need to get you out of here, right? He's like, thanks. Thank you so much.
Did you ever fight in a...
I never stuck my knuckles in a man's ass.
No, any event that allowed ball shots, like the old Heath Hackney, Joe-san fight,
no,
remember that?
No, you know, by the time we were doing that, it was always sort of a universal, like, dude, don't hit anybody in the nuts.
Heath Hackney, Joe-san is a famous moment in MMA.
Boom, and he's especially putting like a tiger choke on him.
Yeah, a tiger choke! Especially when you find out later that, you know, Joe-san is a fucking mass rapist.
A maniac, crazy person.
A crazy person who was involved in a gang rape. You know, they caught him for something else and they did a DNA scan on him. And that guy used to always hang around the Comedy Store. He was always in the back room of the Comedy Store. You'd run into him and he'd call everyone sir and like bow to everyone. He was really weird. He was really, really weird. Yeah, and he would have like no shirt on. He was like super yoked. Really short limbs, but super yoked. He'd be calling everyone sir. It's like, and then when it turned out that this guy was like a mass or a gang rapist, you're like, oh, wow. What a weird guy to have hanging around.
That's about as bad as it can be, but I don't know. I would think that in his mind, he probably set his bar even higher than that.
Did you ever try any of these compression shorts, cup things that a lot, you know, like videos of them, like Jaco has one and Diamond MMA have one?
You know what? I used to wear the Dirty Boxer one.
Yeah.
Mine tore. But I also learned a hard lesson of if you're wearing... I see, okay. I wear Vale Tudo trunks.
Right.
So, if you're wearing spandex trunks, and you put spandex shorts on underneath that, spandex and spandex just sort of, all of a sudden, your outer trunks are like turned into some sort of Daisy Duke wedgie up your ass.
Right.
And then your under trunks are hanging, you just look like a
retard. Hot as fuck is what you're trying to say.
Oh, you look sexy as shit.
So, oh, no, it's like, oh, my God, look at that little
But those compression shorts is probably the best way to avoid really bad ball shots, right? Does it keep it in place? Or is it
jockstrap or tie cup. I think if...
Do you use tie cup?
No, I use a jockstrap. Just a plain just old jockstrap with one of those flexible cups because my thighs are so big that a normal cup, it just starts digging into the inside of my legs.
Those flexible cups are good, but these... I've tried recently. The reason why I asked is Diamond MMA has this really intense compression short setup with all these straps and this video. So the guy
are you sure it's for it. Training and not for like?
Well, he's got a ball gag, but that's optional. The idea is that this guy has eliminated the movement, which is where the cup fails. You know, the cup moves to the side, and then you get kicked in the balls, and the cup actually hits the balls, which obviously can happen if you just have a loose jock strap.
So you can't pull it to the side.
Yeah, his shit is, there's no tuckies from the side. This shit is slammed in place. But Kenny Florian says that a tie cup is the best. He says that you could, it's uncomfortable as fuck because it has to go up your ass like a G-string, but if you do it that way, it's not movement. It's just stuck.
So we're saying Kenny Florian isn't an ass play.
I don't think he's into that, man. I don't think he minds chafed inner thighs, though.
Yeah, he's okay with that.
A goddamn steel cup with, like, a little piece of leather
he's
around the side.
You know, rubbing balm into his groin.
Yeah, you probably have to before you get going. You probably have to use some KY on the sides of your thighs.
A little bit. Some Kegels.
Keep it in place. I don't know how Kegels is going to help you.
Okay, so here we're going off on a
shit
tangent.
Direction,
we're talking a lot about cups.
Yeah.
Which is... not entirely what I thought was going to be on the table today, but...
Well, it's a terrible design, the human body with the balls on the outside for fighting. I mean, when you're a fighter,
but
okay?
If your balls weren't on the outside, she couldn't, like,
true.
Lick them while you're...
Exactly.
While you're stroking it.
Yeah, it's like a trade-off.
Yeah, I mean, you got the good with the bad on that
just
one.
Just what a ridiculous button that every man has his button.
Ding, 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 ding.
Yeah. It's out there. Everybody knows where it is.
Yep.
We're all running around vulnerable.
And we've made countless jokes about it. If you didn't know that it was... Not only was it painful, it's hilarious.
It is. Yeah, even when you're watching an MMA bout and someone just gets kicked in the balls, like, oh! Like,
let's watch it one more time.
Yeah, let's watch it a few. Yeah, we always replay it. I don't know why. There's no reason to.
But there's got to be fetishes built around cups.
Oh, I'm sure.
Absolutely.
I'm sure people sell their cups.
Or, like, you know, like someone that wears a cup and gets a boner under the cup somehow.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. It's like fucking crushing his mushroom.
Weird dudes that like jerking off to guys.
Maurice Smith isn't that guy.
Joseph, I heard your podcast, Joseph. That shit wasn't funny. Maurice, stand up for me.
You know what? He should really tell this story. But he was,
for folks who don't know,
somebody,
former UFC heavyweight champion, great kickboxer, world heavyweight kickboxer champion, and trained
and owner of a utility belt. Not a joke. So
a utility belt.
He's got this fucking leather utility belt thing with pockets and pouches and for all his shit and gadgets. And it's monogrammed MS on it for multiple sclerosis.
So it's not quite a fanny pack.
Oh, it is the ultimate of fanny packs. It's, you know, Batman. It's a bat utility belt.
I'm a little jealous.
Well, he can get one made for you. I mean, he was pretty proud to tell me about where. I'm like, I'm actually mocking you. I'm not asking for a location on where I could have one of my own.
I'm sure you saw Maurice's last fight.
Of course I did. I jumped out of my chair.
Amazing.
I was losing my shit. It was
amazing.
So awesome. And I knew
old.
Exactly when it was all going to go downhill. There was a point, because I used to spar Maurice all the time, and he's standing out in front of the guy, and he kind of gets this little grin. I go, that's it. He's figured this dude out. He's got him handled. It's only going to get worse from here. And Mo doesn't go for the kill. He's not like, get in there and just trying to annihilate you, dude. He chopped. He just, score, Josh. I don't know why. You know what? Too hard. It's too hard. Just score. That's Maurice Smith. So, so he's fighting.
What is
UFC.
That score? That's his philosophy.
It's like, you know, just score. If you keep landing, you're good.
Right.
You know, eventually
don't
you'll
try to go for the kill. You set yourself up.
Yeah.
You
know, eventually the right shot will present itself. So, you know, he threw that right hand and step right kick. He knew the guy was going to take off to his left, and he ate it, and it was majesty.
He was great in the first Coleman fight, man. When you really got a chance to see,
he talked all that shit. He's like, oh, you hit like a girl and all this, and Coleman tried to punch him out and gassed, and he just took his
so
time.
He was so calm. And he never got upset by it all. Me and him were talking before the fight, and everybody thought he was going to his death. And Maurice was so calm. He was so calm. He was just hanging out back there with Kirk, the dude he used to train him.
Kirk Jensen.
Yeah.
the mic.
What'd you call?
No.
Settle down.
So anyway, so Maurice Smith is driving around in his Porsche. His license plate always says kickboxer.
Like old, like redone. He always had like 73 with like a little too much engine to
like
it.
A GT2 kit on it or something. Yeah. So anyways, he's driving around this Porsche, and I think somebody, I don't remember how he ended up getting in contact with this guy, but he was fighting, he was doing extreme fighting, I think he was fighting UFC, and this guy at a bus stop somehow, he's sitting, he goes, hey, I want to buy something off of you. And Maurice is like, okay. He's like, let me buy your jockstrap. And Maurice had his stuff on him, and he goes, like $300. Guy pulls out $300, sells his jockstrap, takes off, and Maurice is like, I don't care, you can do whatever you want to. I'm, what an idiot. Yeah, I got $300. I'm like, and you have now Maurice Smith limited edition semen stained freaking jockstrap now. Maybe the guy's wearing, sure. He's like, maybe the guy's wearing it on his face like Darth Vader. Like it's something, but
something.
And then it made me think, what is my jockstrap worth? Would I sell it? Fuck yeah.
How much?
I'd like to get five figures for it.
Five figures?
$1,000?
That's not impossible. No. You know what I think? If you could take, well, it's too bad you probably already washed it from the Cormier fight.
I smell great, man.
You know what would be amazing?
My pheromones.
If you had plastic bags. I'm not saying that you should fake this, but if you did have plastic bags
the minute you stripped your gear off.
Jock from the Randy Couture fight is in a Ziploc bag, hermetically sealed.
Hermetically sealed. And you can get,
this is the jock strap you were wearing when you won the title. How much would that be worth?
Only jock straps.
Yeah.
Only
jock straps. Yeah. If you just had them all like in a file at home, I'm not saying that you should fake this, but if you did have like a file that you pull apart and it was filled with organized all your, how many fights have you had now?
Fuck. Unsanctioned included, over 50.
Could you imagine if you had 50 plastic bags filled with every jockstrap from every fight that you'd ever been in, including some had blood on them, some smeared, you know, some
shit stained,
some with quick knockouts where you didn't even really get them stinky.
You know what? They would have to be hermetically sealed because the smell is radiated for said jock straps for like a 15-mile radius would pull in every woman and every like feral dog.
Yeah, they would be howling shit, coyotes at night. And the Cormier one would probably be worth the most because there's still like sweat inside the bag.
Still damp.
Still like some like bubbles, some moisture bubbles in the bag. You know, but like, you know, if you go back to the Pride days, those are dried out.
Right.
You
know, they've shrunk a little even.
That would be someone's going to do it now.
Yeah.
Because we brought it up, we've set that in motion. There's going
to
be
You know what? I got to pay for tires if I keep blowing up. So what better than to use, you know, a little bit of elastic around my waist?
You might be able to retire on this. I'm telling you. If you could just stop.
If you could, you would. You know? If you could retire on something as ridiculous as that.
Selling your jockstrap? Well, we should put up a thing. You got one more fight coming up in Strikeforce, right?
Yeah.
How long is it going to be before your hand's healed?
I'm sure I got at least another 3 months.
What do you have to do for like physical therapy when that happens? Did they put a pin in it and everything?
There's a pretty gnarly pin. I'm going to have that removed at some point. Basically,
do you have to have that removed? Or is it an option?
No, I don't have to, but I think it's smarter in the long run.
To heal the hand.
Stronger that way.
Right. A lot of people that have plates in their arm, the plate is the problem, right?
Right, and if it does break, if you break the hardware, and now you got that crap stuck in the bone, it makes it even worse to try and put it all back together.
What's like Nogueira's situation? Like he had his, I think it's called the humerus, the upper bone, snapped when Mir tapped him.
I think he just started rubbing acai on it.
I think his issue right now is the plate. You know, I don't know if they can go in and take it out though. Is it every break?
Oh, he can't fight?
No, he pulled out of the Congo fight. He can. He apparently is in intense pain during wrestling. When he was fine for a little while, but then when it got to wrestling, it was just too much pain. I guess that plate digging into your bones and digging into the meat of your arm. I don't think you're supposed to. I mean, I think that has to be probably removed if you're going to engage in combat sports.
I would think so.
Sports.
Yeah.
What about Mir's leg? Whatever happened with that? Does he still have the plate in it?
It's probably a prosthetic with a machine gun in it by now. No one Mir.
Mir's so crazy. It's
where he hides his knives.
He's so crazy.
I'm one of the biggest, strongest dudes walking the planet, and I'm covered in weapons.
Covered in guns.
For all the people that want to attack me.
Wow. I don't know what that's all about, but he is the wrong dude to fuck with.
Yeah, no, you know what? If he fell down a flight of stairs, he'd stab himself to death.
And shoot people.
Yeah.
Getting shot through office buildings.
As Frank Mir trips on the sidewalk.
His ankle gun goes off.
Oh, his fucking...
Blows up a gas station across the street.
His dick dagger just stabs someone in the foot.
Dick dagger. Yeah, what's up with dudes like him who's like who's already a killer and he wants to be like fully armed to the teeth when he leaves the house? He's like a real survivalist type of dude in that way.
You live in Vegas. I imagine his survival skills are a lot different than the usual guy. Like, how do you avoid vomit on the street?
And
like, how do you get into the strip club without paying?
Well, when you work there, it's easy.
Yeah.
But Vegas is a dark place, though, as far as like the type of people
everybody
that
talks about Vegas. I'm like, I hate Vegas.
Yeah.
I don't like it because it's, one, it's purposefully fake and engineered to fuck you up, like even from the carpet, from the way they did. I think it's kind of cool that they've figured out the ways to make you gamble and spend money and fuck your life over and to assign to some, you know, formula. Like, wow, that's pretty cool. That's fucking cool in a way. I just don't want it to happen to me. But then once you leave the strip, right, you leave all the opulence and all the cool shit that they're you know, all the fucking things that they're dangling out there to pull you in. And you get just outside the strip, like every service industry thing around there is filled full of all the lost, gritty, fucking prison tatted, like wrangled up, fucking used condoms of people that all like lost everything in Vegas and they can't leave.
Yep.
And you know, you go and you order your Sonic burger and you're like, fuck, dude, I don't know what happened to you, but that looks contagious. I don't really. Like, you know, seven, like, fucking snaggletooth on one side.
And it's a strange part of the country.
Bad news.
Strange part of the country.
It's a desert.
Yeah.
It's a fucking desert. What is in a desert? Yes, there's life in the desert. I've seen all that National Geographic bullshit, too. I know it. But not really meant for us.
Yeah.
You know who lives in the desert? Crazy people. Curmudgeons. You know.
Weirdos.
Yeah.
We were actually talking about that before you got here. We're like, if the shit goes down, Vegas is one of the last places you want to be because there's no food there. They can't get food. So once trucks stop coming in and planes stop landing with food...
All the $6 prime ribs?
Yeah, gone. All that shit. Yeah, no money. There's no money for casinos.
Pacific Northwest.
Yeah.
You can grow everything you need up there.
That's the truth. That's the truth. I was watching the video of Chael Sonnen preparing for Anderson Silva, and it showed Portland. I'm like, God damn, that's beautiful. Look how fucking green everything is. Green and healthy. I mean, you could have an incredible garden.
But you'd have
there.
A serious problem with Portland.
What?
All the people with the fucking discs in their ears.
Oh.
You'd be off-put and with that. All the rings in the
sagging?
Noses.
Yeah, the rings.
No, they're not sagging.
I know, that's another thing I don't get, the bull ring. So many beautiful women have that.
And the it's bull ring, like, right? Yeah. In their nose.
It's like, man.
It should only be okay if you can attach a little chain onto it and drag them around.
Wasn't that a girl like Tina Marie? Didn't she have
that? She had
a nose
like
ring
this thing going
cord
to the
cord to the ear, right?
Yeah.
Remember? Yeah, Portland does have a lot of freaky people with those nose rings. That nose ring is so unnecessary. I've seen some girls who have like a nose ring, and it's kind of sexy. Like, I dated a girl once who had a ring in her nostrils.
I mean, yeah. People can pull shit off.
Yeah, but they can't pull off that bull ring.
That's pretty
I've never seen
tough.
Anybody pull that off.
The other thing is chest tattoos on a woman is not my thing.
Unless she's hot as fuck.
They're so
big. The skull with the wings.
Yeah, and I look at it, but I'm like, you're not a sailor. Are you going to give you a bare knuckle fight or something? Like, no, you're not. So you don't. You know what? You have tits. You have the greatest tattoo ever created for your chest.
Yeah,
your
you
tits.
Have the ultimate like
big tits,
visual.
Little tits, whatever. You got tits. You don't need to put ink on top of the tits. Leave the tits alone.
Yeah, it's
leave
true.
Me to have the chest tattoos and the handlebar mustaches.
It's why you brought this up. I have to write something down because I can't forget that I have to make fun of my friend Bill Burr for. Using a Thomas guide in 2012. He's one of those dudes, like, he, I love the guy, he's an awesome comedian, but he has a 1950 pickup. I think it's got, like, the shifter. It's
okay. Like a three-speed on the column.
On the column, and he got no navigation system. He uses fucking Thomas guides, and he's, like, he's always joking around about it, you know, like, using Thomas guides. You know, there's some people that refuse.
Metzger maps.
They get a kick out of, like, ignoring.
Being antiquated to the level of difficulty.
Yeah.
Like, you know why people had maps?
Yeah.
Because it was fucking hard trying to fucking follow the Falcon as it went down the road and remember. No, so we created a map. And now you went from a map. This is your bit, I think, actually. What? About the whole, you know, oh, now you're going to go back to, you know, when you were living in some fucking dirt hole right. and you discovered you had a bathtub.
Right.
Like, look at how much of an advancement in tech. This is wonderful. I'm going to have my baby in a bathtub. And then you go from that and you have a hospital. And then now all of a sudden, like, no, let's go back into a fucking a hole full of mud and have a baby in that because that's natural.
Yeah, well, that was me making fun of women who wanted to have, like, natural births. Like, stupid. There's
See,
nothing
I know
natural.
When somebody else is, you know, I'm, you know. Oh, no, I've heard that. No, oh, that's his.
Well, it becomes a thing, man. When you are around a bunch of people, you kind of forget sometimes who was the one who said it. You know?
But it's funny, but it made perfect sense. Like, it's not, there's nothing, okay, wanting to have a natural childbirth in some way or whatever, like, okay, I can, all right. Yeah, I get it.
You want to be where the baby has the most likely chance
of
survival.
Exactly. Babies died constantly.
All the time.
So now we have the ability to keep babies from dying, so why don't we do that? So it's the same thing. Like, okay, I understand using a Thomas map or whatever, but we have GPS now. Now, if you have the Thomas guides because in case your GPS fails,
that's
cool.
When it gets crazy.
Driving a 3-speed truck, that's all right, too. Like, that's
drum brakes.
I mean, it still drives, it still stops. As long as you're aware of what you're dealing with, you're okay. I just drove up here in a 69, well, barely drove up here in a 69 Oldsmobile. But I know what I'm dealing with, and I'm okay with that. But I didn't drive up here with a fucking Thomas map the whole time trying to do this fucking thing.
I used to have a 68442.
You used to have a lot of cool shit.
I love that.
Still do, I bet.
That back bumper. Yeah. One of the greatest bumpers in the history of automobiles, that giant chrome shiny bumper.
That's one of the reasons why I have this kind of car, because I had a 300C SRT8, great car, and it had been rear-ended twice. See, I never got in any at wrecks until I got to California. I'm on the 605. We get past this fucked up traffic, and I start driving by, and I see a fucked up car on the right, which is why I'm like, fucking California. You just can't go a day without having to run yourself into somebody else. Like, just fucking morons. And then we speed up, and then it starts slowing down again. I'm like, oh, fuck. I slow down, stop, and then boom, right into my back.
I wasn't paying attention.
Of course not. And then they manage to fix the car from that. It's all good. I go and I pull the trim off, have all the chrome turned black, and murder out the car. It looks awesome. Like, okay, cool. I'm going to keep on to this for, you know, so many more years, and then I'll finally get a new car. And then I'm leaving at this place at like 2:30 in the morning. It's been a good night for me. And I'm on Beverly and La Cienega. I just parked. Four cars maybe ahead of me. It's at a red light. And I'm just chilling. Boom! Like, didn't even hit brakes. This Ranger just plows right into the back of me and just annihilates the back of my car.
I'm just texting? Going, was he texting?
I don't know what he was doing. He wasn't drunk. Because the first thing I did is I got hit. And at first I thought, oh shit, it was a crazy boyfriend hit me. Like, crazy ex-boyfriend, sorry. No, not that guy. In his truck. And I looked over, and so I see a truck.
Motion.
And I got... Well, the first thing is, doing all this fighting shit that I've been doing, high-stress situations, I know I have way better facilities than your average person. Even today, I'm driving in the fast lane at 75 miles an hour, and there's that wall on the 110 on the left-hand side of the concrete divider. And I heard, zzz, boom! And it goes out, and the car immediately tries to go into the wall. Uh-huh. But I managed to. I'm braking the car. I'm applying brakes and feathering it and steering the wheel and keeping it straight. I didn't hit a fucking thing, you know.
Kept it together.
Oh yeah,
like a man.
Like a man.
Like a man, Josh Barnett.
I didn't fall off that horse. I rode that bitch.
That's what I'm talking
and
about.
And I fucked it.
Whoa.
Fucked it good.
And then ate it. That's
and then
sushi.
Ate it. And then I became buffer and more sexually dominant. My prowess, my sperm count went up.
How long have we been doing this, Brian?
Almost 2 hours. An hour 45.
Okay.
So I go and I get hit. I look. I see the truck. First thing I do is I get out of the car and I jog over to where the truck is pulling over onto the side. And then I notice different truck come over, take a look. And I see these two dudes in the car and they're like freaking out. Like, oh my God, fuck, I can't believe this. They're upset about getting into an accident. Not drunk at all.
So they were texting or blowing each other?
One of the two.
Maybe both.
At the same time.
Texting while blowing each other.
Texting about how good it felt to be blown.
Oh, this is so awesome. Tweet.
After that, I'm like, you know what? I really like the idea of having a nice all-steel car. So, like, go ahead and run into this. See how that's going to work out for you.
That's true. That's one thing about those old cars, man. They could take a fucking hell of a wallop.
you can smash into stuff. And, you know, when I finally lose it and I just start going berserk on the freeway and hitting people, then this is going to be the vehicle to do it.
It's definitely better than, like, a Prius.
Oh, everything's better than a fucking Prius.
Isn't that an insult, goddamn it, when you see one of those on the road?
Have you been on a Prius taxi? They're the worst because they can't even fit any luggage in the trunks.
No, it's pathetic. But I don't have anything against hybrid technologies or cleaner, safer burning stuff. Fine.
Can't fuck with the rumble of a V8.
No, you can't. And here's the thing. Like, if you want to drive that, go for it. You think you're saving the environment by creating a bunch of fucking shitty batteries that are going to pollute something somewhere, then all right, whatever.
Conflict minerals from Congo.
Yeah, so anything designed that it's all a fucking scam. It's not... There's been ways, I'm sure, of that you could have the most fuel-efficient gasoline-powered car that we have no idea, because every one of those things has been shelved on purpose by the oil companies themselves. Because
I'm sure.
What good would it do you to have to buy less gas?
This is probably a car that can run on water.
Yeah.
We probably have that already.
So anyhow, you see these Priuses, and it's okay, but it has no soul.
Right.
Hybrid cars have no souls whatsoever. I've driven a hybrid car, and I'm like, well, you know what? It drives. It's a car. It's fine, and it does what it needs to do, but I feel like I'm in a soulless, lifeless box. And you spend so much time, especially if you live in L.A., behind the wheel. Like, I want to drive something that makes me feel good about being in it, that makes me get out of bed in the morning and go to get in my car and be like, God damn, if you were a chick, I'd totally hit on you. You know?
And that's the 69 old does that?
Well, it's a grizzled girl, I'll tell you that. But she knows her way around the block.
Bar whore.
Yeah.
No teeth.
No, she smoked about 687,000 cigarettes in her life. And, you know, now she talks with one of those little fucking microphone dealies in her neck. But, it's got personality. And the car is not perfect, and that's fine. You know, it's mechanically sound, and it runs great, and it's fun. And
trying to explain the appeal, though.
It's...
of like one of those
having
like a V8 engine feel.
It has, you turn the car over and it's boom. It's got a sound. It's like, hey, what's up? I'm here. How you doing? What are we doing today? What do you want to do? Want to run some shit over? Want to go fast? What do you want to do? Well, we could just hang out. Let's fucking get on the road.
It's a completely different experience than a Corolla. Even though Corolla's a very nice car, can get you where you want to go.
Right.
It's lacking that. And it's something that was captured in the creation of those cars.
And these cars are steel, and they're solid. They're meant to last a very long time. They are, and there are touches in terms of comfort and of just style that are stupid. Like, that's obnoxious. You didn't have to create little emblems that some little fucker had to paint himself and then put them on the inside of the interior. Like, no one's ever going to pay attention to half of that shit. But they did it anyways, you know, and they're like sinking the lights in a certain way and having to put chrome around that bezel and going the extra mile, like the extra 30th mile that is you're not going to get in a car nowadays. And being in that kind of, it's like going into those old buildings and seeing all those touches that they put into the flooring, into the mantles, and you're getting that, but in a vehicle. You can tell the difference between a factory just churning out some, you know, four-wheeled mobile to get you wherever, and somebody, even a factory line where people are putting these things together.
Do you appreciate technologically advanced cars like a Nissan GTR, for instance?
Oh, the Godzilla?
Yeah.
I think it's amazing. They can make an over 4,000-pound car run that fast.
I don't think it's quite that heavy. I think it's 3,900, 3,850.
It's heavy.
It's very heavy. Four-wheel drive, 0 to 60 in less than 3 seconds. It's crazy.
Nuts. Yeah, it's unreal that their car, and then it'll do it and in such a way that what my racer friends will tell me that almost any idiot can get behind the wheel of that car and learn to be fast.
Yeah.
So, so some folks have been like, don't get one of those. I'm like, I'm not just sitting on 80 grand that I'm going to go run out and buy a car with, but okay, why not? And they go, you're going to get bored. You know, it's going to be awesome. It's going to this and that. And then eventually it's like, there's no fun in this. It doesn't need to be.
Well, it doesn't scare the shit out of you.
It doesn't come out.
It does everything.
Yeah, it does everything, and it does it all well, and it takes all the efforts and a lot of the skills out of learning and adapting to a vehicle, and it takes it away.
Well, you can take all that shit off. You can shut off all that shit. You can shut off all that electronic control and treat it like you're on a racetrack, and then it'll scare the fuck out of you.
You can go sideways on that car.
Oh, I'm sure you can.
Yeah, you just have to just shut off all the stability systems.
I love the car. I think it's one of the coolest cars on the road.
It's almost ridiculous to get anything else. If you wanted to get a car that goes fast, like that car, not only does it go fast, it's like it's super techno. It's like the most advanced technological achievement as far as like what we can do today to get you to go fast and safe. It's the most technologically
efficient.
And it'll do efficient.
It what a car that costs three times as much.
Right, yeah.
But then, I was talking to somebody about the difference there is, okay, that GTR will do it, but when you get in that GTR and you look around and it is comfortable and it's got everything you need, if you get in that Ferrari, that all of a sudden things, it's not, okay, the Ferrari isn't maybe quite as fast, or maybe it's as fast, but you look at the way it was put together.
Yeah.
And the way the leather
is. Well, they're made by hand.
Oh, it's. Like, I mean, there's a huge difference there, and I would... The trouble with a Ferrari is I would love to get behind the wheel, which I've never done, and drive the shit out of one and treat it like
a thoroughbred
that it is. I'll totally treat it like a whore.
Dirty bitch.
Shiz all over her face. Yeah. But it's too expensive.
Yeah.
You do that, and all of a sudden the bill shows up for changing oil, brakes, all that fuck. And if you don't have the nomenclature that says you had it all done, then the value starts going down, and like that's just too much fucking much. Which is also why I bought a 69 Olds Cutlass that is not a super special one. It's not super pretty. It's not perfect. So when it gets dinged, oh well.
Yeah.
Like whatever.
Well, that's one of the things I've always said, where there's something to be said for like a Corvette ZR1. It's like what they've done is just blown everything out of the water as far as like performance, as far as 0 to 60. It's right up there with every other car that's ever been made. It's 60 to 0. Mm-hmm. Stops quicker than any car that's ever been made. It's got one of the most ridiculous Nürburgring times. So it's like, you know, the interior is it's not that good. It's okay.
It's still, yeah.
But look, okay, put all that shit aside. The fucking speedometer works, all right?
Yes.
You hit that gas pedal, that's a real engine, bitch. That's a 638 horsepower V8 that sounds like hell.
Dude,
it sounds like the fires of hell.
In World Challenge road racing for SCCA, they have there's a team for Cadillac. And those fucking CTS-Vs.
Oh, those are ridiculous.
They start rolling around the track. They sound bad as fuck.
Yeah.
They sound like, even if they don't take first, they at least let everybody know that they were there.
It's a beastly fucking car. And those CTS-Vs are ridiculous. Like, you can't believe you're in a four-door sedan that's a Cadillac.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And they wail. They're like 560-something fucking horsepower. Essentially the same engine. It's a detuned version of the ZR1's engine.
And just hauling ass. You can get in a wagon.
Yeah.
So you can stick your kids in the back.
It shows the G-force
on
a wagon. We live in an awesome time as far as like what's possible today.
I think so. I think cars have come to such a different level. I love my GT500, my 09. It's such a badass car, and my sponsors and everybody have helped me to make it even more gnarly.
I have a GT500. I have a 2011 convertible.
What do you think?
Fucking great, man.
Isn't it just an amazing car?
It sounds so good. You can slide the tail out if you want to, you know? I mean, it has some sort of traction control, but it's basically, it's a fucking live axle car. It's fun. It's really enjoyable.
Yeah, well, I went and took all that enjoyable thing and then turned it into, like, a murderer. So it's,
what'd you do to it?
Well, I put a Whipple supercharger on it, so 686 rear wheel horsepower. I got KW and BMR for suspension. I braced the whole fucking thing up and have coilovers all around it.
You get wider tires?
Not yet.
But you're going to
eventually? Yeah. No, HRE is supposed to make the wheels for the car. I'm just waiting on somebody to step up on the brakes because it's going to be in the Optima Ultimate Street Car Challenge this year. I got a one-piece carbon, one-piece aluminum driveline from Lethal Performance and like all this different stuff. And I had somebody drive the car. I took the rear seats out of it. I pulled all the rear stuff out. Kind of this little deal set in. I've got to put a roll cage in honestly, and I'm still taking weight out of the car and doing the thing, but it's got the stereo in it, it's got everything. I put these amazing Recaro seats in the front. It's super comfy, and I've got this Magnaflow exhaust all through it, these 3-inch pipes, and every time I turn the car over, I mean, I know that my neighbors are just like fucking rattling. It's loud as shit.
Well, just the stock exhaust in this GT500 is fucking amazing.
Now it's ridiculous.
Oh, it's one of the greatest sounds ever. The roar of a good V8 and a great exhaust.
Yes. And I let this guy drive it, and he goes, this car's trying to murder you. I go, yeah, pretty much. I tell everyone it's a 30-30 car. In 30 seconds to 30 feet, some Joe Schmoke is behind the wheel. They've wrecked it.
Wow.
Because it'll just go out from underneath you. I mean, it doesn't take anything to blow the tires off.
Way too much power for those back tires, right?
Well, kind of. Well, the suspension, honestly, leaving the Optima Challenge last year, just watching, and I decided to go through Death Valley instead of, and then meet up with the 15. So it's just stretches of just empty road. And I've got this little EVAP problem right now. I got to sort that out. So it like to put the car in limp mode, so I can't stomp it. But I can roll into stuff. It'll cruise at 140, flat as fuck. And if you go into a 55-mile-an-hour corner at 120, it just rolls right through it and comes right back out. I mean, it's just this suspension from KW and all the chassis and bracing shit from BMR just has this thing rocked on the ground. And I took it to this guy out in West L.A., and this guy Tom, can't remember the name of his shop, but at any moment you could have, like, $11 million worth of cars all sitting around this place that looks like a dump, and you don't even know it's there. But he's fantastic with doing suspension and tweaking these cars out. And they set it up for my weight and everything and dropped it and lowered it and set all the suspension geometry
right. They set it
right.
For your physical weight?
Yeah.
Because like you're a heavier guy?
Right. So because you have to adjust for that 250 pounds sitting in the driver's seat
right.
And how that affects suspension.
So do they have like an asymmetric suspension? Is that what it is? Like one side is like at a different height or something?
Yes, slightly.
To keep it balanced.
And you know flat. How they basically just have your fat ass sit in there and then fucking adjust
and they
it.
Adjust
and
it.
They take the measurements and then do the adjustments as need be. And
wow.
And this my buddy Chris from KW, and he works with all the drift guys like Daya Shahara and all them and sets their suspensions up and everything, comes up with different ways of doing it.
What is the whole drift movement? What is that about? Why do people like to go sideways in cars?
Basically, well, one, because it looks cool.
Right, it does look pretty
cool. It looks fucking cool. Well, I think I would call drift the combination of stunt driving and racing, because they have to go fast enough through it. It's not just about going sideways, because they do it in those tandems. So the idea is like to try and match your and get as close and as tight and to emulate the guy's run in front of you as tight as possible without hitting him, hitting the wall, hitting anything else, and doing it as fast and as skillful as possible. So I look at it, I'm like, it's just like, you know, a violent auto ballet.
That's funny. That's a funny way
of looking at it. The events are really fun, too. So they've got, like, DJs, and it's like a huge party the whole day long.
Violent auto ballet.
Auto ballet. Yeah. And,
How do they judge? It's based on,
They judge on speed. They look at the speed. They look at how... Now they have these clipping point things, where they've got these lights that'll monitor up if you get within a foot of them with your car. So they measure how close you get to these clipping points. They also measure how closely you follow, you hit the right apexes and lines for the drifts, but also how closely and tightly you follow the guy ahead of you, the lead car, and you're as the follow car.
So a lot of crashes.
There's a decent amount of whacking with this stuff, yeah. But they're not catastrophic, but yeah. They most of their body panels are tied on with zip ties, so they just fucking rip right off.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
On purpose to make it lighter? Yeah,
so, well, just so that, because if you have all these fucking Zeus fittings all over the place, locked in there, and it gets torn, now it just breaks at some little spot and falls off real easy. So instead of tearing like a whole bunch of fairing off of the car or something, it just tears off a little, like the bumper rips off, and you can go ahead and fix that real quick and zip it right back on again.
Oh, that's interesting. So they've sort of like altered them to deal with the constant collisions.
Yeah. Well, and like, there are some amazing moments where someone's coming through like coming up against the wall, and they're getting that back end out, and they get so close that the back end hits the wall just enough to fold it in, and when they come off, it pops back out. I mean, that's holy shit, dude. You literally ran your car into the wall, but just enough that it was still okay.
Well, one day there's going to be, every car is going to be like a GTR where everything is calculated. They're going to see things coming and break.
Except it's not going to go that fast, and the government's going to tell you where to drive.
That's going
to
be a real problem, isn't it? You know, I had heard something about, I don't know if this is a true story, I never really researched it, but someone was really driving really fast on the highway,
mm-hmm.
and the cops called, OnStar?
Yeah.
And they shut the car
off.
Is that true?
I think that is.
Is that really possible? See, that seems to me to be... I mean, like, I'm not for people getting away from the cops.
Me neither.
But I am
not also for the fucking Skynet shutting your car off.
No.
That drives me nuts.
It's like, if you have a problem, there, one thing is to deal with the problem. Another thing is to take it so much further that now all of a sudden everybody's freedoms are impinged. That's not okay.
Yeah, the fact that
I'd rather have to deal with cops chasing somebody down, even if it ended up in my house getting ruined because of it, than having a big brother able to make everybody do everything the way they want to every time.
Yeah, absolute power corrupts absolutely.
Well, and I was talking to this gal, and she's going, oh, I would love it if cars started driving themselves. So they were talking about that magnetic system where, you know, they had the cars following in traffic and stopping and slowing down and, you know, reducing accidents. And I think safety is great.
Mm-hmm.
But life is dangerous, period. We die every day.
That's
every
part
day
of the we're fun. Dying.
Yeah, you know what? Cormac McCarthy talked about about everything is about games in this book, Blood and Meridian. And he goes on about how it's, you know, games. Men love games. Boys love games. But what they love, the thing about a game that makes it more important or less is what's at stake. So war being the ultimate game because death is at stake. And that is the ultimate wager is life. And it's true. If there was no consequences for a lot of the things that we did, there would be no... that wouldn't have any meaning.
Of course.
Getting into the ring and fighting somebody with no consequence of injury or death or whatever wouldn't hold nearly as much interest. It wouldn't have the same meaning behind it.
MMA has to be very careful because if samurai fighting starts becoming like really popular and dudes start actually sword fighting,
mm-hmm.
then people aren't going to watch MMA as much.
I think there's a whole collection of sword fighting videos right now.
Really?
I think it's with Cox.
Oh
yeah.
Do you think that there's a
do I think that I could do well
sword
in that?
Fighting?
I don't know. Oh, you mean like that movie Lorenzo Lamas? Blades.
Was there a Lorenzo Lamas movie?
There's a Lorenzo Lamas movie where it's like Knight of the Warrior, or the Hunter, or something. He's fighting with swords.
Is that possible for us to go back down to like the Romans and the Christians and the lions and all that stuff?
Not yet.
Not yet.
But anything's possible.
Right.
I mean, come on, look at the way that government is today versus the way it was, say, even in the 50s or in the early 1900s. It's
much more intrusive, much more power. Yeah,
by far. And or just look at how radical taste may change in terms of what content you'll see on television versus
we're about to wrap it up, Brian. Okay.
What you would see, let's say, even in the most risque part of the 20s or 30s.
Yeah.
Technology, of course, always has a lot to do with that. You know, you have cameras that anybody can use to shoot. So, of course, it's much easier to make porn than it was back in, you know, when you had an Edison machine or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah, you actually had to wind.
Yeah, you gotta have a good strong arm, and you gotta have coordination to jerk off and wind a wheel all at the same time. But look at, if you just turn into regular advertising, I mean, it's amazing that there aren't just men just jerking off on corners everywhere they go because there's so much sex being thrown at you all the time.
It's the best way to sell things.
Right. And how much we can get away with in terms of flesh and provocative whatever. And we see these things as being, and I don't have anything against any of this, but back in the 30s, like, people would have an aneurysm. Like, that's like unthought of to see something like that. And it just... things progress. Now, could things progress to where people are really sword fighting? I don't know. I suppose so.
We'd have to have a few natural disasters, but
if
I think
people
it could happen.
Wanted to sword fight, shouldn't they be allowed to?
I think they
if
should
they choose to do it.
If they choose to do it, yeah. If they choose to do it. If people, I mean, want the ultimate contest. It's not like if they don't do that, they're going to live forever.
Right.
They're a temporary being. If you choose to go out that way.
Actually, as a Highlander, I have to sword fight to live forever.
That's the only way, right?
Right.
There could be only one.
Of course.
Josh Barnett, ladies and gentlemen, this has been a fun podcast, dude. Thank you very much, brother.
My pleasure. Great time. I hope to come back on.
Oh, please. Anytime. Definitely. And so you said about 3 months before people can look forward to seeing you back in action.
I mean, I got good.
3 months before you can go back into hard training?
Yeah. Hard to say. I got to follow up on Friday. But, I mean, I've got good range of motion in it. But I do want to take – I know that's going to take a little longer to cut this back open. And I don't like surgery. I don't want to get cut open. I don't want to go under. But I just think in the long run it's going to be a lot better to get
So you have to do that soon, and then you have to recover from that.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm even looking into, there's what can they do for bone density, mm-hmm. you know, nowadays. And – I mean, this is my livelihood. I need to make sure that this shit doesn't happen again.
Yeah, what Kennedy? Can you? I was asking online about Makawaras. Is that? Is there any fucking?
I think so. Those karateka are like, yeah, they can punch just about anything.
Yeah,
and there's like Chinese iron palm techniques, and these people work on it, and so
it seems like it would condition your hands. I mean, yeah. Makawara, those guys have giant knuckles, and it seems like that would help a little bit.
I've seen documentary of the dude. He hits a little piece of steel every day. You know, some kung fu dude. And it's legit, man. The guy, he doesn't feel.
Are you gonna look at doing something like that?
Yeah, that and like, you know, what forms of calcium or whatever. And there's supposedly something called Forteo out there, which is a bone density drug.
Really?
They give it to the women with osteoporosis with high likelihood of fracture.
Wow. And it might be able to, like, a healthy person jack up your bone density?
I suppose. Wow. I mean, the thing is, we're losing bone density every day. You
know? Yeah, that is a problem with getting older. We're fighting the power, man.
Fighting it. And, slowly. You know, every cell that we have in our body is constantly being attacked, and it will degenerate over time. And can't live forever, but while you're here, you'd like to be able to use it as much as possible.
How old are you now, man?
34.
34. How much longer are you thinking of me throwing down?
Until I can't.
Till you can't.
Till I can't.
Till the fucking wheels fall. Till the fucking
bloody my hands to the last breath be torn from me. Because as much as you fucking, this isn't the only amount of time you have in your life to do this. And fighting is me. Fighting is absolutely a part of who I am. Violence is a part of my life, and that I've got a lot more to me than that. But being in the ring and being in war, that's what I'm made for.
There's a lot of guys who say that, and you go, okay, dude, keep convincing yourself. When you say that, Josh Barnett is telling the fucking truth. That's exactly what you feel. That's exactly what you mean when you're saying it. You're 100% committed and convicted to it. It's fun.
And I told someone the other day, I go, when I go to the ring, I'm already dead. I go to the ring as a dead person. I have no feelings. I have no emotions. I don't care about anyone. I don't care about anything. I don't care about my life anymore. I don't have it. I have a little set list of songs I listen to in my hotel room before I go to, and I, you know, like a couple tears might fall from my eyes. I don't, without any sound, just, you know, just out of nowhere, just, and I know that those tears are for the life that I no longer own, that it is gone. I am dead now. I have mourned my life, and it is no longer existent. I am this is me right now. I am walking the life of a dead person, and the only way to go is to go out there and let's go to the death. Let's just, I have nothing to lose because I have nothing anymore. There is nothing. I feel nothing. I care for nothing. And
well, in the middle of that, it's got to be the most intense feeling of all time. When you're in the middle of a cage, like in your last fight, the most recent one with Cormier, and you guys are both throwing down, and you both had broken hands at that point in time, it's got to be one of the most intense and realistic forms of struggle on earth.
It is, but unfortunately, that's where it's great, where your corner man can give you that input to aim your direction, because I got in there, broke my hand, made a couple, fucked up a couple times in there, and then all of a sudden I went into fight to the death mode, but it's not a fight to the death. It's a fight for 5 rounds. If you don't finish it in 5, chances are you're going to lose. So, people looking at you like, oh, you're like blowing blood out of your nose and just, you know, you're coming at people and never stop coming forward and trying to murder. I'm like, right, but in front of 3 judges, a referee, and 5 rounds, it didn't work.
So
I got paid less, and you know, thanks.
It's still a learning process.
It is
always to the end.
I mean, and I know that it is a learning process. But I know that for me, being like that, feeling that way, there's days I feel it. Most of the time, I feel like that's the way I really am. That's when I get my strip off everything that society has imparted on me and parts on me, like pushes on me like that. I throw it all away, and I tell you what, feeling like you're dead is pretty free. You really feel free. You've never appreciated life more when you've already given it away.
It makes sense. Yeah, it makes sense. It's as intense as things can get. There's no other way, right? I mean, that is as intense. There's nothing other than actual war itself, you know? There's nothing more intense.
No, and I think, you know, you start getting to that, it's like the, I'm going to try and do something, you just do it. If there's something that must be done, you do it. You just do it. And everything doesn't have to always be to the level of, you know, I'm the Walking Dead. and I don't have any emotion or feeling anymore. I had a girl I was in love with break the living shit out of my heart as soon as I had to go off over to Japan. And I had pro wrestling matches to do and stuff, and I'm destroyed inside. I'm totally ruined. And I'm giving press conferences and shit like that. And, you know, they need to see a hero. But inside, I just feel like a piece of shit. You know, I feel terrible. And I'll go out there and wrestle match. And I had to wrestle a match, in, you know, in front of 12,000 people and make it look amazing. And I did. And we tore the house down. But it was like, you know what? You feel like death right now. You feel like the lowest form, and your heart is so broken. But nobody paid for that, so it doesn't really matter how you feel right now. You have this in front of you, and this must be accomplished. And you can, anybody may excuse you for circumstances, but that's, no, sorry. There really is no excuse. There is only the result, and only, you know, whether you do it or you don't.
What's it like for you to see guys that you came up with, like guys like Pedro Hizo, that mm-hmm. have reached pretty much the end, and you see the end, and do you take like a mental account, to look at it?
I'm gonna start wearing headgear in training, even, because I'm tired of getting hit in the head by fucking some of the monsters that are in there, and I know that. Part of the reason I try to read as much as I do, and I do want to be a more well, every day that I have a chance to be a better person and learn more and have a broader sense of this world at large, is necessary. It's important. I think that's part of my, not just right as a person to do so, but I think it's a necessity. Like, you should have to do that. But it's also to stave away the effects of that kind of shit, of dementia and whatever. I mean, I'm getting hit in the head in practice constantly. And then I go in the ring and I get hit in the head some more. And it damages your brain. There's no way around it. Some people are more susceptible to the side effects of it, of catching pugilistic dementia and the different, you know, becoming punch drunk. But I know that there have been times where I find myself trying to catch a word and I'm like, I don't know why I can't think of that right now, but that's, maybe it's because I'm getting hit in the head by Eric Prindle, who's like 300 pounds.
Right.
But so why not just save that brain so that I can use more of it? And even I'm still going to be getting hit in the head no matter what headgear I have on me. But I don't want to take things to the point where I've made a disability for myself mentally or physically with fighting.
Do you think you'll be able to discern that?
I think if I'm honest, I will. But when I watch guys like Pedro, you know, he can't take a punch like he used to. And part of me feels bad when, you know, I do feel sad for that, where they're at now compared to where they used to be. But I'm also more so happy that they are here on this earth, loving their life, still being able to exert themselves in the ring and be a part of this. And if they decide to retire, or when it comes to that point, they need to retire, that they did it, that they had the opportunity, that they lived that life, they took those experiences into themselves, and they can stand there in front of anybody and go, I did this, I made my mistakes, I had my successes, I did this, I did it with everything I got, and you know what? You can't take any of that away from me, ever. It's all mine, and I earned it, and that's beautiful.
Powerful wisdom from Josh Barnett. Ladies and gentlemen, and with that note, that's the end of this podcast.
That's the real end of this podcast.
This is the first time we ever did a podcast like this. For folks listening, this is going to sound weird. It might sound a little different because we're using a totally different setup. We had some sort of electrical shortage, and Brian got zapped in the face with a fucking lightning bolt. But and
Josh, I wish I could have seen that.
Yeah, it was like a white spark.
Too busy trying to run my car into the fucking divider and wall on 110 North.
Well, there was a lot involved in making this podcast happen, but it did happen. So thank you very much, sir. I really appreciate it. Thanks again to our sponsors. Thanks to The Fleshlight. Go to joerogan.net. Click on the link for The Fleshlight. Enter in the code name Rogan. Save yourself 15% off the number one sex toy for men. Thanks to, it's true. It's for real. It's our sponsor.
Okay.
Thanks to onnit.com, O-N-N-I-T, makers of Alpha Brain, Shroom Tech Sport, Shroom Tech Immune, and New Mood, the 5-HTP supplement.
I take shrooms myself.
Do you?
I mean, that's not even
cordyceps.
A joke. Like, I took cordyceps and just a whole a mushroom blend. They're
I do too. Right. Amazing.
Mushrooms are very healthy.
There's a lot of really healthy mushrooms. We also have kettlebells and battle ropes all for sale now. Go to onnit.com. And if you use the code name Rogan, you will save 10% off all supplements. So go get some. Thank you, Josh Barnett. That's the end. Good night, you dirty bitches. Oh, follow Josh on Twitter. It's Josh L. Barnett. B-A-R-N-E-T-T.
Oh.